Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom, dad's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more, and then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Penny Bloom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Winter is Blooming, a Game of Thrones rewatch podcast by us, the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today, we continue our rewatch of Game of Thrones with Season 8, Episode 4, The Last of the Starks. It was written by D&D, David Benioff, and D.B. Weiss, and directed by David Nutter, the Nutman. I am Colton Robertson. I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
Oh, what up, what up? Always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And the Nutman, you know, going out with a fizzle, not a bang, you know?
Yeah, I was a little sad to hear, actually, that this was the Nutman. Maybe you told me before that he had, like, one more to go or something like that, and it would be episode four. But, yeah, I guess, you know, it's... He's got a lot of other good ones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He's done a great job, and... But yeah, this one, I don't know if it's all his fault. You know, I guess directing wise,
you can only do so much with the script.
Yeah,
you're given,
like he had to just kind of go from a whole lot. Like, there's so much that happens from beginning to end in this episode. It's kind of nuts, and I think we start to see that turn a little bit in Thrones with the pacing after the long night. I see the gripe, and I actually kind of, like, usually, I don't know, I try to see the counter side and, like, see the other side without the gripe and see if it's, you know, warranted and everything. And then after, like, it actually does, I don't know,
no, I mean,
lower
it's not
the
good.
Impact.
It's not good. It's getting worse. It's in, like, jarringly, you know, like, we are clearly dealing with Season 8 being either two halves of a five-episode season or two seasons between episodes 1 through 3 and episodes 4 through 6. Like,
I don't know how many times I was watching this episode, and I'm like, it could have ended right there. Or, like, it should have ended right there. Mm-hmm. Oh, it should have ended there. Like, there was many times where they could have ended the episode, and you know, there's, like, on paper, you would think, like, oh, we're getting more big things that happen from multiple episodes into one. Like, it's, what more could you ask for? You're getting more densely packed epicness, you know? So that should be a good thing, but I don't know. With this show, it just doesn't really work that way.
Skipping thing to thing, but, yeah, David Nutter. I mean, he has been on some of the biggies. Reigns of Castamere. That's a Nutman. That's a Boom. Nutman episode. The final two episodes of season 5, The Dance of Dragons and Mother's Mercy. So where we say goodbye to Jon Snow and Dany mounts her dragon for the first time and rides away, you know, like that whole I'm pretty sure that's the season 5 finale, not the season 4 finale. She doesn't right? Is that the first time she rides them?
Season 4 finale is Watchers on the Wall and the Children.
Oh yeah, so that's the she does not that one. That she flies it for the first time.
Yeah,
in
Dance
the
of Dragons and Mother's Mercy at season 5.
All right. Yeah, so he directed those. Clearly a lot of good stuff under his belt. But season 8 he directed half the episodes. Episodes 1 2 and 4. Two of the three low points of the season, I would say.
You're
in a tough position here, Nutman. I'm sorry about it.
The Nutman. Yeah, usually every time we've entered an episode with the Nutman, it's been a banger. It's usually been quite good. So I think, I don't know. He's earned his stripes.
For sure.
And that's, but, you know, some scenes are actually good. Like, there are some little moments that you can pick out here that are, like, I don't know, that are good.
Is that it's literally the pace. That's been beaten into the fucking ground, that critique, I know. But, like, it is. Like, that is the problem with this episode. It's the fact that we are getting probably 3 episodes of any given Throne season packed into one fucking episode. Like, it's just thing after thing after thing, and it's a lot. But so the things themselves, not terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's hilarious. I can't wait to talk a little bit more when we get to a certain part of the episode, but about the inside the episode at the end with the D&D. But if you would like to, we can go ahead and begin at the Winterfell. Starts at the funeral. We'll head to the feast thereafter.
Okay.
And we kick off the episode with what was my favorite scene of the episode. I didn't think that we could. I was like, well, hopefully we can top this. And by the end of the episode, I found myself going, yeah, no, nothing topped it. The funeral at the beginning is probably the last truly good, emotionally weighty moment.
Yeah, I think I took it for granted here on this watch just because it was the opener of the episode, and I didn't like think of it as a favorite. But like, man, wow! No, it actually it got me to cry. Like, I'm crying. Like, I instantly I'm like, oh fuck, man, they got me. You know, like just seeing Jorah alone, like just there still, I'm like, oh fuck. And then you have Emilia Clarke walking over and bawling her eyes out, and I'm like, okay, yeah. So, okay, yeah, this is definitely the scene out of the episode that gets you to feel the most.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like, straight up, in terms of dealing with the ramifications of what's happened and feeling the emotional weight of everything that the characters have gone through, there is not another emotional moment like this the rest of the show, which is super disappointing. It's super disappointing. I think that, you could argue that the last 5 minutes of the show are like, but it's not the same kind of emotion. It's just like,
It's just, you know, the literal send off of the show. Yeah. Like, it's
so like, this is it. This is it. You know, like, this is the last good emotional moment, I think. And so pyres go for as far as the eye can see. It seems like piled with multiple bodies, thousands of corpses. Jorah, Theon, Lyanna Mormont, among them, Dolores said. It was a tough one. It was a tough one. And the way they achieved some of the effects in this, I remember watching the documentary on the final season's making. Jorah, Ian Glenn is literally laying on a plate of glass. So when you see the fire, like, bubbling up underneath him, it's not like it's a practical effect. Like, there is actually fire underneath him, but he's
okay.
He's not being touched by it, you know. Like, so
wow, that's cool.
I mean, it looks good. Like, and that's the thing that you can say about the rest of these episodes, that they fucking look good. They look good, you know.
Yes, the technical and the right, like, I was gonna say the critical side of the show is still great, but writing is a big part.
I mean, there's one very massive
that.
Piece
yeah.
of the critical stuff that is not doing great. But
we still have all the same actors. We still have all the same costumes, all the same sets, all the same great-looking things.
It looks wonderful. And I mean, like, even this eulogy that John gives, you might argue it's the best written thing for the rest of the fucking show. I mean, the way that he delivers, they fought together, and they died together. He's very much so channeling.
Yes. How did I not catch it? How do you catch? I don't know. You always catch these things. And then me, I'm just like, at first, I'm dumb. You know, I'm like, I look at him like, huh, he sounds like different. You know, that I just noticed that he was different. Not that who is he trying to imitate right now? And I'm just it sounded
different.
He's
emulating Ned hard here.
Yeah. And I rewatch it and it's just
Boom.
He's got the little tiny bun on the back of his head and the hair falling down his back. So, and he's got the giant cloak on. It's just like that is who he is trying to emulate his father, Ned Stark, at speaking to the people.
They fought together.
Yeah, and they died
together.
I mean, it's
an incredible speech, man, and it's probably Kit Harington's strongest moment for the rest of the entirety of season 8. It's difficult to reconcile that it doesn't get better than this. You know, like that's insane. But I think
you're right though. That's the thing, is that there isn't a single scene that I can remember.
There are moments that feel a certain way that are like iconic or they're strong, but they just don't give you the fulfillment this one does. And the I love the way the Night's Watch funeral speech, the way it all comes back around for him, and he's like, "They were the shields that guarded the realms of men. We shall never see their like again." I felt it, man. Like, it's just really cool to see an actually weighty moment from a character who has had such a long journey, sending the people off, achieved what his entire fucking story has been. Like, that is the eradication of the Army of the Dead. He's sending off, you know, every word out of his mouth, he means it with every ounce of his being, and it makes it hard, you know. So I loved this scene, but now their watch is ended, and the assembled leaders go forward with torches to light the pyres. Sansa Stark weeps over Theon's body, taking a pin with the Stark direwolf sigil off her own gown and adding it to his chest to show that he was a Greyjoy and a Stark himself. One of the things that I don't love about this episode, and this scene, that I don't know how you fix it, is that Yara's not here.
Oh, yeah. I guess. Well, so she just said, "I'm taking back the Iron Islands in your name." She's already done that, so like she's just chilling there. Is that the idea that she's?
That's the idea. Which I mean, like it would be impractical for her to like. Over, like, I take it this is the next fucking morning, you know, like this isn't, they didn't let, it probably took a fucking while to gather.
Like, damn, all right, we gotta clean up one. We gotta, like, there's just a shit, just shit everywhere. And like, clean up, that probably took like a whole day. And like, all right, now we gotta build these fire things. That's, I mean, I don't know.
This might have taken a fucking week, man. Like,
the thought crossed my mind of the fire that they are lighting here, just to mourn the dead, is almost, it's not, but like it almost reminded me of like the size of the greatest fire the North has ever seen.
Right.
That Mance Rayder lit. And it's like I don't know. Like, they almost got there unintentionally. Like, this is just a funeral. Like, this wasn't, like, a purposeful, like, I will light a fire to signal you guys. This is just, like, well, we have to do it because it's just what we do.
There's just that many bodies, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's also an important bit of it.
You think. Right. They're kind of, I don't know. It's weird how, like, you have to die north of the wall or, like, something. But, like, the Night King's dead. Say someone dies north of the wall. And you don't burn their body. Since the Night King is there, do they come back still?
No.
You know?
I don't think
they're
so.
Just so it's done forever.
I think, like, that shit is gone. I think that they will never observe a different funerary practice just in case.
It just sticks. Like, this will stick. Like, so, like, they're like, well, now. You know what? If you're dead, I think that's how I would feel. You know, like, I'd be like, if I'm dead, I am dead, and I'd rather be burned so I do not come back. Yeah.
No, and I mean, like, I believe the Wildlings already practiced that tradition because of that fact. Like, they knew the Army of the Dead existed, so they did their best to observe that if possible. But yeah, I think that as far as Winterfell is concerned, it's not likely that anyone other than a Stark. is not getting.
Yeah, because I just didn't know if it was a Night King thing that makes people just come back and join the Army of the Dead, or if it's just like a world magic thing. Yeah, it's just like a thing that just happens in this world. If you're north of the wall, it's part of the magic of the wall sort of
they
thing.
They did evolve the whole how that works, like how they come back to life quite a bit, you know, because the first one we see that comes south of the wall and attacks John and Gior Mormont at Castle Black, I don't think the Night King is close enough to do his little raise up thing, you know? So like, that's one of those things where I think that's just, mm-hmm. we're looking at something they evolved over the course of the show, more so than it being like a whole, they just kind of realized what they wanted it to be as time passed. So I truly think that I don't think they just automatically come back to life. I do think it has something to do with the Night King's magic and,
with, and now that he's gone, it's just the bloodline. Everything's just gone for good.
It's over. Yeah.
I guess, yeah, the north, even north of the wall is starting to warm up eventually. So like, I guess even if it is a world thing or magic thing, something's changed up there. So yeah, it's gone. We're all good.
Yeah, we're good now. We're good now. I think that's the idea here, but. Yeah, it's real sad to see Sansa say goodbye to Theon and Daenerys lighting Jorah's pyre, and it's funny that like I've initially had a little bit of like a like, all right, like they just needed someone's pyre, you know, like because it's Lyanna Mormont, which this time it hit me a little harder than it has, you know. I think Lyanna's a real one and all that, but when it comes to every other, like,
yeah,
every,
I see what you mean. They had a moment with that person.
It's much like more personal. But I thought about the moments with Lyanna for John, and she's the one who stands up for him at every turn, prior to him going south. She's the one who basically declares him king in the north initially, you know, like,
is this a hot take? It might not be. Is Lyanna Mormont the closest in character to Jon Snow?
She might be. She might be.
I don't know of another character that is.
Like
pure just honor and
fierceness.
You know, kind of the right thing always. Like, they always make the right decision. We don't get to see enough of Lyanna, I don't think, to like.
Oh yeah, I mean, she dies extremely
to fully
young.
Know. But like, she charges a giant, an undead giant, and stabs that motherfucker in the eye. So like, yeah, I don't know. I'd say
she carries that spirit to be sure. I think that's fair. You know, and I think there's something to be said for the fact that she's named after Jon's mom. You know, like that is why she's named Lyanna, is because of Lyanna Stark.
Okay.
So like,
yeah.
There's clearly a connection, a deep connection between the Mormonts and the Starks. And
Dolores Ed was there, but, you know, Sam needed to have someone, you know, and that was kind of the only one that worked there. And, well, you know, John could have had Dolores Ed. And
oh, of course. But even going back further with Lyanna, her, great uncle was John's mentor and taught him all sorts of shit at the wall. Like, Gior was, I'm assuming, her uncle, because I think, or not her uncle, Jorah calls her cousin, so
okay. Jorah calls her cousin, so that's an uncle.
It could be your uncle. Yeah but yeah, so
uncle or great uncle, yeah, I don't know, maybe there's a generation.
Yeah, something there.
But, yeah, I guess, duh, they are the Mormonts.
Yeah, so we're putting...
I like, yeah, he's... It's his Lord Commander's family, you know, at the very least, at rest. So I think, yeah, I don't know, it does...
No, track. I mean, like, I wanted to say, like, I've always kind of felt like it was odd. This was the first time I ever didn't feel that way. Like, that's kind of what I wanted to clarify.
I see.
Was that, like, I was like... Oh, like, I think taking the time we have with the show has kind of made it just all the more clear just how important Liana was to John and just how important their kind of their connection was. Cause I think you bring up a good point. I hadn't considered that, like, if there was anybody John looked at in the Northern Lords sort of like gatherings as admirable or like of the same mind as him, it was probably Liana. Like,
yeah, like Varys is the only other character that comes close, but even not, he is.
I'm like Davos, not
really,
but
mm-hmm.
I'm like Davos is pretty close, but like in terms of just the Ned position Stark, they're in, what they get to do.
Yeah, I guess yeah. Ned's the only other one. But
no, but like I think it's cool that, you know, John shares such a close kinship with the Mormonts at large. You know, I think that even Jorah, despite one of his poorer decisions in the times when he was really down on his luck, besides that, pretty close in character to John. This is you true. Know? So like, there's a lot of
sorry, Jorah. There. Yeah, sorry, I slept on you a little bit. You just kind of have a little thing that taints your history and all. But you know, I'll give him that. You're not your worst deed. I'd no, say,
you're
but
you're not. But yeah, no. And so it's sad to see all these people go. Arya Lights, Beric Dondarrion's pyre. That was a nice last little. And it's just like all the memories flooding back of the history these characters have. The first time Arya meets Beric, she looks half as old as she is now. I know she's not literally half as old as she is now, but she looks like a fucking child when she meets Beric. So a lot of these characters have just come a really long way with the people they're meeting, or the people they're sending into the beyond. But yeah, so that speech and that funeral, my favorite scene of the episode. There's more fun stuff, you know, but that just hit me a little bit more. That night, the survivors hold a victory feast in the Great Hall of Winterfell. So many died. So the mood is a bit like, I like how it starts and it's kind of like everyone's just kind of eating in silence. Like,
yeah, like, we did that. We really like, and we're all really hungry. So like, yeah, we all just cleaned up. We just burned a bunch of people. All right.
Gendry sits down with the Hound. Where's Arya? He's like, you can still smell the bodies burning, and that's what you're thinking about?
Like, I really need to just find Arya. I no particular reason at all. I just would really like to find her. Man, yeah, this...
And the Hound putting it that way, like, I get it. They're dead. Yeah. You're not. You know, like, live it up.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, fair enough. This... probably was like he's had a crush on Arya for a while now, you know, even all before this was the night before the long night. Like, yeah, this was definitely Gendry's best experience he's ever had, and he's gonna chase that forever, like, moving forward. And now it's like, I don't know, it's kind of, you know, he wins here. I'd say he's a lord, you know. He got up
what he needs, you know. He walks past the high table and Daenerys is like, yo, Gendry. He's like, yeah.
Why she gotta start this so
ominously?
Yes. Oh, you are the son of King Robert Baratheon, who had a claim to the throne at one point. Is this correct?
Which is also news to like everybody in the room besides three people.
Wait, that's actually right. People are like not in the know of this at all.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this is when she says that, everyone even further goes, like, oh, no, what's she about to do to the boy Gendry right now? You know, like, but I love the look whenever she goes, you are the son of the King Robert Baratheon. It flashes to Davos, who looks at John, and John looks at Davos like, I'm sorry. You know, like, I kind of had to tell her, you know, like, but Davos looks at him like, come on, dude, like, you can't tell her that, you know? So I love that moment, but, just a fun little, and this is really the episode where they start hammering home that what she has is fear, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Literally said later on that Tyrion, like Sansa looks at Tyrion's like, you're afraid of her, you know, like, and so whenever Davos looks at Jon and Jon, like, he like winces, he doesn't just like, I'm sorry. He's like, fuck, you know, he's like, she's going to kill his ass.
Oh,
you
that could have, yeah. Like my actions could have very, very bad implications.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that was, it was D&D kind of said that that was the focus of this last season, is that a lot of times these stories don't, they focus on the good people and the heroic moments and everything like that, but they,
It's all right. We'll get it popping again. In the meantime, everybody on YouTube, you can just look at me for a sec.
You know, I shouldn't have trusted that it worked.
Take it all in. Just me.
On the first go around. I should not have trusted that at all.
Yeah. These things happen. These things happen. But,
anyway. Okay.
Anywho, we'll push forth. Gendry humbly responds that he didn't know that he was Robert's son until after the man had died. And Daenerys then asks him, okay, then who's the Lord of Storm's End now? Does anybody know? Everybody kind of looks around like, that's kind of unclear. Stannis is dead. Renly is dead. There's no real Baratheon left.
Stannis, there's just yet, Storm's End has just kind of been
vacant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, yeah, I guess Dragonstone
didn't even
hold
Storm's End. It was Renly. So, like, who the fuck's been holding Storm's End for so long?
For some reason, I thought Dragonstone and Storm's End were the same place, but that's where Renly,
Renly's camp was based out of, and Stannis was based on Dragonstone. So, I'm like, who's been the Lord of Storm's End for fucking years?
Power resides where men believe, you know, or where people believe.
Did it get passed to, Peter at some point? I feel like that's possible.
Yeah, maybe it's grouped in with the Vale, you know, or something. I don't know. Yeah, yeah, just kind of a non-factor in the show, I guess.
Interesting. So, if it leaves the seat vacant, like, Stannis became Lord of Storm's End after Renly's death.
Okay.
And Joffrey's death. Okay, no, wait. The Lannister and Tyrell forces consolidated control of the Stormlands in the name of King Joffrey, presumably making Joffrey Lord of Storm's End. But Stannis claims the title, and in season 4, Joffrey's death, his titles, presumably including Lord of Storm's End, are passed on to Tommen. Stannis is defeated at Winterfell in season 5, which makes Tommen the Lord of Storm's End. Tommen commits suicide, and then the seat's vacant. So it's been vacant since season 6. But if there is a vacant seat by the ancestral holding of the castle, it's just the king. The king crown. Is the Lord of Storm's End. Okay.
That so Cersei, sense. I guess.
Technically was. Yeah. Until this.
Okay. Yeah, good old Gendry, though. A little promotion. Last good thing Daenerys kind of does.
it's certainly among them.
Yeah, there's... Let's see, what else does she do from here on out that's good? I'm only really thinking of bad things.
As far as I recall, you could spin stuff, you know? She avenges her friend Missandei.
Yeah, she did do that. Very much so.
Probably more so than she needed to. You know?
Yeah.
She just decides that Gendry is the new Lord of Storm's End as a reward for his heroics. And Gendry is shocked and says he can't be. He's only Robert's bastard, and Daenerys quickly addresses this by announcing that in her power as queen, he is Gendry Baratheon because she says it is so.
A weird delivery here, honestly. You know, could like
bad line.
It's like I get like what they're going for. It's like, you know, I'm allowing you, like I'm like that doesn't matter anymore. Like the, you know, the title, like I'm giving you your title, but it's like it's very much like thank me, you know, like am like, the reason. Like
she's telling him that you wouldn't be this without me. Like, mm-hmm. and she wants him, like what her and Tyrion talk about in a second when she's like, he's like, ah, so now you got a Lord of Storm's End who will be forever loyal to you. That's a good idea, you know?
Again,
she's like, yeah, you're not the only one that's clever.
It's like, okay. I mean, you know, like, yeah. Good move, and she's getting the North a little bit on her side. She got them to cheer. Sansa is actually, she doesn't like this. Like, she sees the North kind of respond to her in a good way, and she's kind of like, eh. You know, Sansa's like, does not like that at all. I don't know if that's only it. Is that the only reason Sansa kind of gets upset here? Is that Dany's kind of gaining a little bit of control? Or is there something else going on that I'm...
I think that's it. I think that she's watching Dany in the wake of tragedy and loss and everything continue to focus on consolidating power for herself. Like, this was... You know, and this is a good veiled act of revelry. It's a celebration. We're going to give a hero the biggest promotion of his life. Yeah. Like that's huge. That is worthy of celebration, but Sansa sees it for what it is, which is the political act, not an actual.
Should this have really been the first thing that we get down to business with, you know, is like, I guess,
or should we be getting down to business at all? I think is kind of what Sansa's thinking. Like it's,
like you know, really, so, like this is a feast, and we're playing the game here right now, like for real kind of thing. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so all the while, Sansa looks over at the exchange between Daenerys and Tyrion when Tyrion compliments this action. And she looks severely disappointed, and Tyrion kind of responds with a little bit of a, like, I see, you know, but it is what it is. It was smart, you know, but despite any lingering resentment, the mood is lightened, and the hall becomes more celebratory after this when Davos proposes the toast to Gendry Baratheon, Lord of Storm's End, and it's just a nice little moment between them, like how far they've come, and
that's what Dany should have done. She should have made it like, hey, let's celebrate this moment. Not like, hey, I did this for you, you're welcome. Let's like, hey, no, you're Gendry, you're the hero, you are the blacksmith, you're the one who forged all these weapons, blah blah blah, and without you we couldn't have done this, so you are the Lord of Storm's End. And that's kind of what I was looking for more, if she's gonna do this. But you know, love Davos just comes in clutch every time when you need him.
He's like my boy. I love it. But Davos's mood quickly sours. Tyrion talks to Davos briefly, who tells him about Melisandre's death, how he was going to kill her, but then she died. Or her god did it to her. I don't know what the fuck it means. You know, I hated Melisandre, but clearly the Lord of Light was around. It was the last connection. Her last connection to it ended with her. And he's wondering, will this divine power directly intervene in their affairs only to leave them after the great danger passed? Is there nothing left? What do we do now? And Tyrion's like, oh, I don't think thinking about that too much is going to help anything. I don't think it's going to help you be any happier. And Davos is like, I'm not trying to be happy. And Tyrion's like, good. We've got a lot more problems to face if you want to worry about those.
Yeah. Maybe Cersei will just kill us all and our problems will be solved. He's like, that's easy. Like, we just got through the Night King, the Long Night, and now this is like harder. This is like just worse to deal with, because like the Night King, even though he's terrible and one of the worst threats you can imagine, at least it's just like pure evil, and you know that, and everyone is just fighting against it. But now it's like all of these manipulations and games that are being played. I don't know. It's just so much more complicated. Like, and it's like they'd rather deal with the Night King than Cersei.
What's more sinister to deal with? Like evil incarnate or a human being who has descended into such madness that she's so purely evil, you know, like it's.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's funny, but yeah, the human problems are more difficult.
They are. They are. Yeah. They're a little bit more pressing, but, you know, we have defeated them, but we still have us to deal with, he says. And Tyrion then sends Bran Stark, pointing out that, as Ned Stark's last trueborn son, he should be the lawful heir to Winterfell in the North. Bran's like, nah, I can't be. Three-eyed Raven now, man. And he's like, you don't want, he's like, I don't really want anymore.
Sure about that?
Like, I envy you, you know, that's, that'd be nice. And he goes, I wouldn't. I mostly live in the past.
The one line that I actually kind of liked from Bran, like, at least, yeah, like, at least he's self-aware enough to be like, no, this shit sucks. Like, I am actually not a human anymore. Like, no, I do live in the past. I don't have a life anymore. But yeah, it is really funny just to hear him be like, no, I don't want anymore. But come 2 episodes, Tyrion, I'm going to really need you to, lock me in as, lock me in as King of the Seven Kingdoms, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't know, bro.
It's maybe not a want, you know, to him. It's more of like, it's just a necessity. It's just what has to happen. Oh my God, that's incredible. Okay, yeah, yes, I just noticed them.
I noticed what scene we're getting to, so I had to post them up.
Let's go.
Kind of hugging and kissing. But Tormund and Sansa encourage Jon to chug an entire horn of wine in one go. Jon's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to
drink
all in one go. And Sansa's like, I believe in you. You can do it. And he's like, vomiting is not celebrating. And Tormund
come on,
goes,
guys, yeah. It's like,
yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, he's like, and I love that Sansa's just kind of there too, like, yeah, dude, no, come on. Let's
get it, dude. Let's do this. Thing.
Come on, man. Just chill out, man. John, come on.
Let loose. Tonight's the night, you know?
Let's go, man.
I love that Tormund goes to the Dragon Queen. You know, like he's like, fuck yeah, you know, shout out to Daenerys. This is hard. And all the hall cheers, and Daenerys stands up and makes her own toast to Arya Stark, the hero of Winterfell, which is a cool thing to be titled. And that prompts even more cheers and gets a smile from the Hound. And, Jon and Daenerys share a smile, which is noticed by Sansa, who quickly leaves the table. She's like, nah, like it, don't like it one bit. And meanwhile, Bran settles into playing his I have never styled drinking game with his brother Jaime, Brienne of Tarth, and Podrick Payne. And Jaime and Brienne playfully argue over whether or not she told him she was an only child, but Brienne ends up having to take a drink anyway. And then Jaime tells Brienne she danced with Renly Baratheon. She looks at Pod like, you tell him that? Pod's like, no, I didn't, you know? And she drinks. And I loved the vibe at this table. It's a lot of fun. Brienne doesn't let loose. Tyrion's having fun for the first time in I don't know how long.
Like he's been all business mode like the whole time and failing at it as well. Like maybe his life is just to do this. Like this is what he's good at.
To be on, you know,
kind of manipulating from the background. You know, if he's gonna do anything, just kind of do it like he did before, whenever it was needed, sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know. I love these scenes in Thrones. So like that's.
I do too.
This is like the filler. Like this is what I want.
Character moments you want to see. Yeah.
And but this, I don't know. This is the start of my performance here for the episode, and it is Gwendolyn Christie. I absolutely like adored her here. Just the different emotions she has to go through this episode is quite crazy. And like, you know, I love her when she starts to like get a little drunk and like, cuz I don't know, we don't see Brienne.
You want me to prefer ale? You know, like that whole thing. Like I love. Yes, yeah, never like.
No,
that.
And she. Oh, you know, she's. Yeah. I don't know. She's so like different. I don't know. I thought it was incredible. So this was like just super fun to see her this way, and then eventually we'll get even more emotions with her. So, but yeah, this is. I thought this is not the only performance that stood out, but at least one that kept reoccurring. Like, I'm like, oh man, wow, you're like, you are having to do a lot kind of this episode.
No, I like that. I love that pick. I love Gwendolyn Christie, and I'm glad she's getting one before the end of the show comes around, because She is very, very good. And
is that actually her first?
No, I don't believe it's her first, but I'm glad she's getting one more. I think she's gotten one before.
Puts her at three, actually. She's gotten two.
Okay.
So
we might have picked her on a mutual, like we both agreed.
That's right. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe that was the character whenever she was... Well, that was that very recently, whenever she was, like, announced, a knight,
maybe it was.
Tarth. Let's see. Sir Brienne of Tarth I had, and... Oh, you had Jorah for that episode. But you gave Gwendolyn Christie the performance. I gave her the character for that episode. Okay. So I guess there's another performance from somewhere else.
Oh, okay. So there's... it was not a mutual one. It was just, we've both had a great deal of love for Brienne over the course of this, but it's a great light to paint her in this, like, actually having fun. Jaime being like, if tonight's not the night you drink, I don't know when you're going to fucking do it. Like, this is the time to fucking party, you know?
Yep.
But, a drunken Tormund laughs and drinks all the while, praising Jon and going over their history. He made friends with an enemy. Got himself murdered for it. Most people, when they get murdered, they stay that way. But not this one.
What a hype, man.
Tormund's my character, bro. I fucking loved him this week, bro. Like, him being like, he got himself murdered for it. Most people, you murder them, they stay that way.
Is this where he's spilling the wine kind of the whole time,
the
too?
Drink just... around. Because he goes, man. He fought north of the wall. He fought here. He fought back north of the wall, and then he fought here again. You know, he just keeps fighting. He keeps fighting.
Danny being like, I don't know. I thought it is because this is love. Like, this is love. She's right.
And it's love for the exact same shit she does.
Missandei, like, I don't know.
Climbed on the back of a fucking dragon and fought. What kind of a person climbs on a fucking dragon? A madman or a king?
Yeah, there's another one right over there, actually. There's another person in that room that has done it before him and that birthed those three dragons.
But a good little bit of foreshadowing there. A madman or a king?
Tormund. A little foresight in him. Yes, he's got a little he knew what was coming.
He knew what was going on. And I appreciate John's keenness here to like be like, that probably didn't sit well with Danny. So he kinda like turns back around and is like, hi babe.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Varys is looking at her the whole time, like Varys is watching the nuclear time tick down. Like, he's like, it is almost midnight,
That shot where it starts on Danny's face and then it pans over and the focus shifts to Varys. Brilliant. I loved it.
Scared. Like, fear. Fear is being built, even amongst her advisors, like amongst Varys and Tyrion. They're like, oh fuck, like this is not good. Like, Daenerys stands up, Varys instantly, he's like, yep, I am going with you. Like, you are like, you have to, you can't be alone right now, you know. It's like, this is, we, I don't know, it is the deep end. Like, it's we've already said that it's like, it makes sense completely, like, off this watch. It's like, it's already just happened. Kind of like, it's just happening very slowly over time.
And what will be my line for the episode later on, her choice is already made even before Missandei's dead.
I think you're right. I don't know, my line's way less important but way funnier. I don't think we're quite there yet, actually, but almost.
No, we're about to be. It's not far off. But yeah, Daenerys looks around the room. She notices Tyrion drinking with Brienne, Pod, and Jaime, all happy, loving together. Mm-hmm. She looks at Jon, Tormund, Davos, and some wildlings having fun, loving together. And she's sitting in isolation quietly in the corner. It's like that meme with like the one dude standing in the corner at the party. Everybody's dancing. But like what she's saying is that they don't know that I'm about to burn down an entire city. You know, like that's kind of the vibe.
Oh, oh yeah. It's not just like they don't know that I'm. But
they don't
I don't know that I long for
their love.
Like, to actually, like, yeah, they don't know what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
Yeesh. Yeah, it is very scary. Yeah, very scary. Like, and that's, I don't know. I was keen in on Varys this episode, very specifically. Like, I really loved that shot of him starting to worry and everything, and him noticing these signs way before, and he's like, all right, the game is up. He's like,
this won't work.
Yeah, I guess I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but like, there are some things that I actually do really, really like the like decisions they made and stuff about this episode. So we're not like fully off the deep end of bad, you know, yet. This there's still a lot of things to like about the show.
No, it's just, again, it's just the pace, and especially at the beginning here in Winterfell, we're not dealing with a lot of bad stuff. Like, there's a few interactions that I don't like. There's one interaction that I don't like, but like beyond that, it's pretty fucking solid. You know, Tyrion, Jaime, Brienne, and Pod continue their drinking game, and Brienne correctly guesses that Tyrion was married to someone else before his forced marriage to Sansa, and she takes another guess that Tyrion is drinking wine, but he prefers ale. And Tyrion goes, "No," and it's a lot of fun. And she takes another drink, and you know, like he's looking, thinking what he's going to say next. Brienne is all smiley, and then she glances over at Jaime and looks back at Tyrion, and Tyrion's like, I like the way he like locks in. He's like,
"You're a virgin."
Like, that's a statement. Nope. Or like, Jaime's like, no, against
like
the rules.
Jaime tries to hold it down a little bit. Like, he knows that's not.
Yeah. Like, aw, damn. Damn. Like, it's not now, a game bro. Anymore. Like... Yeah. He's like, damn. Yeah. We went a little too real. A little too real here with Brienne, but
and I love the way Pod goes.
Ooh,
yeah. Pod turns to the side, takes a sip, Jamie's like, so that's the statement. He goes, at no point in the past have you ever slept with a man or a woman
or a woman. Yeah.
He's like, I don't care, you know. Either way, and Brienne doesn't answer. Gets up and says she must relieve herself. And Tormund drunkenly propositions Brienne, who he is quite taken with. He respects a warrior woman, but is rebuffed by her. And as she gets up to go away, he attempts to follow, but Jaime stops him and pats him on the chest and follows Brienne. Tormund watches that with like pain in his eyes, and Tyrion comes over and pours the rest of his wine and Tormund's horn and is like, go ahead, buddy. And then we smash cut to Tormund sobbing, trying to commiserate to the Hound of all people, which I think is hysterical. That
the
like
worst absolute person to go to. You know, I think it's just the only guy that was alone. So it's like, I got to tell this to somebody. Oh, fuck it. The Hound, you're right here. Let me tell you. But no,
I love this interaction, too. It also implies to me to a degree, there's been a lot of stuff that they haven't expressly told us, but the Hound has in passing mentioned stuff about wildlings and about their culture and how they do things. And like, it implies to me that Tormund and the Hound have spent a decent amount of time together since they went beyond the wall. So I thought it was funny that Tormund felt like if there was anybody he was going to go and like pour his heart out to, it was the fucking Hound, which is very,
the Hound, I guess, is kind of the closest to a wildling that there is of people who are south of the wall. But yeah, no, I love that is where the Tormund line does come. And right when I heard it, I mean, it was just clear. I was like, there's no other line of the episode that's going to top this one. And he says, now which one of you cowards shit in my pants? And you know, also trying to swoon Brienne in this moment, you know, and this is where he goes at the end. I think it's just hilarious.
I'm pretty sure it's his opening.
I thought it's the closer. I thought he's kind of going off on a little bit, and then he's like,
We did it. We lived. We fought, and we won.
He's like, all right now.
You coward shit in my pants. You know, like, that's pretty incredible.
I'm pretty certain this, I have been asked this question. There was a point in college where a dude actually shit his pants because he was so drunk and he can't, like, he was like, yeah, I think he knew, like, he fully knew what he did, but he was going around acting like it was a funny
Somebody
thing.
Somebody else who shit in his pants.
Yeah, but no, it's incredible. I love, they're just getting down to it. You know, it's
coward shit in my pants.
Love that man, Tormund. Yeah, had to give him a nod somewhere because he did lighten the episode.
Has he ever gotten
a
character nod? That's who I went with. So I'm like, I think he's gotten one, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is a first time for Tormund.
I don't see any Tormund at all in the stat sheet. So
got him in under the wire, baby. Love that. Okay, I'll take it. I will take
Tormund
it.
Giantsbane. Is that it? Is there? I feel like he has another. Is that it? Just Tormund Giantsbane?
Pretty sure.
I don't know why I felt like there was kind of another name he had.
He had like a nickname when he was introduced, but I don't remember what it was.
But okay, yeah. The last additions we have, like a lot of just really cool ones. Tormund, then it went Melisandre, Gendry, Grey Worm. I'm glad all these people are kind of getting nods in at the very, very end here.
Hell yeah. Yeah, no, I clicked into it. Doesn't look like he had another nickname.
Maybe it was just Giantsbane.
Must be.
But I thought maybe like before he sucked the giant's milk, you know, and became a giant, he was
another name.
I don't know.
But anywho, let's see. Got to scroll back down to where I was. Okay. There we go. Tormund's woe is quickly cleared whenever one of the northern serving girls goes, "How about I'm not afraid of you?" And he kind of like the way he like peeks around Tormund or peeks around the house is like, "Okay,
really? Really? Are you sure? Yeah, maybe you should be." Or he says something you know,
"I'm not afraid of I'm not afraid of the free folk. Maybe you should be." And then he gets up, puts his arm around her, and is like, "All right, Sandor, tonight we drown our sorrows. Let's fucking do it, buddy.
Let's go, dude." Hey, nope. "I'm still drinking, man. I got my drink. Mm-hmm. And man, look who's hooking him up, though. Look who's in the background sending these two. Like, whoa, I'm okay. You know, like she understands what these dudes want. She fully knows and how to read people. So I don't know. I thought this was kind of cool. Like Sansa's arc. You know,
you could argue this was an exceptionally bad read.
Like from the Hound. Like that I guess Tormund.
Tormund was like, "Fuck yeah." You know, like
good read. Yeah, the Hound. Yeah, I don't. Maybe she was just like, we'll see.
We'll take a shot.
Let's see if he takes
it. Earned it. You know, like I love that she's like on her little finger shit. You know, like, she was like, "Go ahead, see about it." Like, I love whenever he like initially denies her, the servant girl like looks across the room at her like, "I don't know what to do." And she's like,
"Well, I guess they do." I was going to say, like, do they have brothels at Winterfell? Like, is that like a thing that they do? And I'm like, yeah, whenever they came in at season one,
the first episode,
Tyrion was with three women. At one least. Time, so yeah, that's
That's where Roz came from initially. If you remember Roz,
oh shit,
she came from a northern brothel. She was in the first episode of the first season because she was with Tyrion. So like,
hell yeah,
Roz, we miss you. You didn't deserve to go out the way you did, but she goes ahead and sits down with the Hound after all this, after all the air clears a bit. And the last time they spoke was at the Battle of the Blackwater, where he offered to try to sneak her out of the city as he abandoned his post, but she felt it was too risky and declined. And he says he heard she was taken by Littlefinger. And after that, Sandor comments that she was, quote, "broken in rough," unquote. marrying Ramsay Bolton, who raped and imprisoned her. And I was like, ah, man, I don't know. I felt like this was an inconsistent character beat for the Hound.
Yeah,
it's never been.
Could have been a banger of a scene here. Like, when they sat down, I'm like, ooh, I think I might be getting into one of my favorite scenes here. And then, yeah, just the word choice and dialogue was a little interesting.
It was rough. The general sentiment. It kind of encapsulates. I told you this off mic. Like this interaction encapsulates the entire episode. It seems well intentioned. Seems like they meant to do the right things, and they just execute it fucking terribly.
And they're not at a point in their if it was Arya and the Hound, I could see this maybe working a little bit more, just because they have so much more history between them. But even still,
it's just
a little disappointing to see from the Hound, because he's always been so good. Like, his arc has been incredible.
Well, and that's the thing for me, is that they've clearly shown an evolution to a certain point where he's not soft, he's not sensitive, you know, but he's emotionally intelligent. He knows what the right and wrong thing to say is. So, and the fact that he has literally saved her in the past from being sexually assaulted.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was an oversight by the writers. And then the stuff that D&D write for Sansa doesn't work for me either, where Sansa says that without Littlefinger and Ramsay and the rest, she'd have stayed a little bird her whole life. But the abuse she suffered made her strong.
Good outlook, you know, I guess, like good,
you know, what doesn't
way
kill
to look
makes
at it,
stronger.
Maybe not the only thing. If you didn't have that, you know, I don't know. Yeah, sure, your life would be a little more innocent, but you would have grown up normally. Probably how you would have preferred. I think it's more of just accepting that it's done, not letting it harp, not harping on it, just kind of being like, yep, it happened. I'm where I'm at
that's
now.
The thing is that,
again,
the intention of the scene, I get it.
It's just not laid out that way.
We're justifying it in a way that it is not written that way. You know, I get that it is what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And literally, if she just says without Littlefinger and Cersei and the rest, you know? Maybe if she doesn't specific, she names Ramsay without Littlefinger and Ramsay and the rest. But it's just yes, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but the idea that she had to be abused and assaulted to become the person she's become, I don't love it, and I don't think it's a great sentiment.
It should have been more of, I didn't have to go through this, but I did, and look where I am now. Because I went through this, I am here now.
And it certainly hardened her in a way she wouldn't have been hardened. I think that's fair to say, but I don't think that's for the best. You know, it's a complicated line to toe, and they tried to approach it, and maybe they just shouldn't have. Ultimately, I think that we're dealing with one of those things where, when it came to House of the Dragon, there were a few things that were handled in a way that could have been really bad, but because they were directed or written by women, it paid off in a way that felt more meaningful. The fact that this scene is written and directed by a man just makes it even more icky. It's like, okay, I don't know what you're getting at here, bro.
We're in the feel good moment after the worst night of all time. This is supposed to be all good. Just happy. And
it ends on a high note. I liked the how'd you have him executed? And she says with a little bit of a smirk, "Hounds." And the hound obviously giggles quite a bit at that. He's like, "Ha ha, yeah, all right, fuck yeah, I dig it."
That was nice. Yeah, that was a nice
little moment. But there it goes again.
I don't have it.
The camera giving us issues. Oh. It happens.
Sorry, the mother.
The mother. Mother's mercy.
There's no love like the mother's.
But we will then continue to after the feast at Winterfell, wherein, slipping out of the hall, Gendry finds Arya practicing archery alone in the stables, nearly taking his head off. It would have been extremely funny. She just snipes this guy's fucking head, and that's it. You're muted. I can't hear you.
But thank you. I would not have realized that. But yeah, she likes to just almost kill people a lot, just to prove that she has this ability.
I could do it. And that's the thing, is like, I this is one of those situations where I think Gendry genuinely just got lucky. Like, she fired that fucking arrow before he came around the corner. You know, like,
Yeah, I guess the new Lord of Storm's End could have been vacant again. Like, that seat could have been vacant very quickly again.
Yeah, would have been kind of funny. But he walks up to her and is like, "Come on, we're celebrating." And she's like, "I am celebrating." And he's like, "Okay, I'm not a bastard anymore. I'm Gendry Baratheon, and I'm the Lord of Storm's End." And she's like, "Oh shit, dude, that's awesome. I'm so fucking happy for you. That rules." And he's like, "I don't fucking know how to do it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't even know how to use a fork. All I know is that I need you by my side. Please fucking marry me. Please be the Lady of Storm's End." And Arya's like, "Oh no, sorry, bud. You'll be a great lord. But I'm not a lady. I'll never be a lady. That's not me." Oh.
You know, as far as all the heartbreaks that happened this episode, this one is like, I don't know, like this needed to have this one. It wouldn't have been good if they actually ran off together.
No.
Like, yeah,
I'm
that would
so
have sucked.
Glad that they had enough head on their shoulders to know that they were like, they can't have Arya end up with Gendry.
That's just what adults do. They had their thing. You know, maybe they could have a relationship still, but not in the way of the traditional.
Not the way Gendry wants to
see. Yeah. And you know, it's kind of interesting that Gendry didn't realize that. You know, that
I think,
like,
it's a really good sign that he shouldn't have been proposing to her.
I don't like. It's just. He knows that she's not like that, you know? I guess he just really is moved by, like, he's just, like...
He's hype, you know? Yeah, like, he's riding a fucking high.
Off the... like,
well, what's even funnier is that he was already looking for her prior to being declared the Lord's End. Was he going to ask her this anyway?
Probably.
You know?
Yes. No, dude, yes. After they fucked, it's over. Because she kind of seeked him out. She was like, "Hey, I'm not going to die a virgin, and you are hot, I am hot, let's do the thing." And I think, you know, Gendry was a little more, that's all he could think about after the battle was over. That's just it. That's what
and
he went back to.
You know, you're riding high. You know, like the Hound says, they're dead. You're not. Like, you want to live. You want to live. And if that's the person you feel like you can live with, you know, so I don't blame it as I don't think it's like, oh, he doesn't know Arya well enough to be proposing or anything. Like, I would make that argument, but it's obviously coming from a place of just deep.
He should know her well enough that he know, like, he should know that this is not what she wants. Not that, like, that he's not.
Know it's a shot in the dark.
Yeah, like, this is, obviously not what Arya wants. Like, yeah. you're asking her to change her way of life completely. Like,
you can take the shot, but you gotta know this isn't gonna go your way. You know, you can be like, how about it? And when she's like, no, you can be like, okay, I thought so, but, you know, I'd be a fool to not try.
Man, Tormund, Tormund gets shut down, you know, and then we see him cry to the Hound. Gendry, not shut down, but, you know, I mean, in his eyes, I guess, you know, he didn't get what he wanted, but then, you know, he starts to cry a little bit. Let's see. Does anyone else get shut down? Yes, that one's actually just very tragic. That one actually hurts a lot to watch. Podrick, though. Whoever, you know, that northern lady was in for quite the night. She had no idea. Maybe
she'd heard.
Maybe
Pod is the thing of legend, you know?
Who cares about the war? If you're just like a normal citizen, like the war is just whatever. You can't do anything about it. You got to hear about the other legends of Westeros, gossip. You know? The Godrod Pod. It has to be going around, you know? For sure. Like, and that's anyone's just.
Did you hear that the whores at King's Landing returned his gold after they had sex? Like,
rumor has it he's traveling with Brienne of Tarth, so it's easy to find him. If you find Brienne, you know that's Podrick. Like, he's the squire of Brienne. So, if you like, I feel like it's possible. Like, I feel like that's like the reality TV of Game of Thrones. You know, they don't have TV, so that's what they got to work with.
They got gossip. You know, like they gotta have gossip. But. Pretty incredible that you know, and that was like, I loved, there were a few just like small transitions that I really loved, and that was one of them. Whenever Pod like turns around and sees the girl and he just kind of smiles, and then they cut to another scene. There was one where in between scenes, literally, they show the Hound grab the giant fucking flagon of wine. Like, they cut from a scene where people talked. They show the Hound grab the flagon of wine and set it on the table, and they cut to another scene where people talk. So it's like a transition shot. Like, that's just like they're establishing that we're moving on to something new, and I fucking loved it. I was like, that's so it was really well edited. It was really well shot. It was like it's really well performed. It's just everything that the show is usually good at, besides writing, that I think that really falls flat for me. But because even some of the stuff that I do like, event-wise, I don't think it's well-written. Hours later, after the feast, Jaime Lannister shows up at Brienne's chamber in the castle, and he begins to unrest, and so does she. And as she admits, she's never slept with anyone before. And this whole interaction, I do like it. I think it's cute. You know, they're both drunk. It's painting Jaime in a new light. He's not very confident. He's like, you know, he is confident.
It's hot in here, man. Yeah. That's all he can say. He's like,
forward about it. He's like, I want to take off my clothes, and I want you to take off your clothes.
Wow, you keep it really hot in here, Brienne.
Yeah.
It's hot. Wow, I'm gonna take off my clothes. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was.
Everyone's drunk, so it's even funnier that everyone's dealing with this sort of thing. So, like, when she's like, "My God, come here," and she starts undressing him, and he's like, "Okay." Starts playing with her and playing with her dress, and she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Taking your clothes off."
Yeah, but, he's like, "Whatever, we're going there." But I like Brienne, you know, her decision here to be like, "All right, you know what?
Fuck it."
Yeah, she deserves this. You know, fully. But what comes after really blows. Like, that's like the only part that sucks is that I know it's coming, and like, what a switch up that kind of just like, why go down this route so far of redeeming this guy? Like, he's done so much terrible shit, but like, you actually sort of are starting to like him here. Like, it's like, wow, he is gone, and he's without Cersei. Maybe he could be a good guy, and then just no.
I don't fucking know, man. I don't know. It's fine. The thing I noticed is that they don't truly try to redeem him until the end of season 7. Like, when he decides to go, when he decides finally, like, fine, I'm fucking gone. You know? So we're dealing with 3 episodes where he fought for the undoubtedly good side. So, something this rewatch kind of showed to me is that the redemption arc Jamie was on wasn't as extensive as I'd previously thought. And I don't know if that's because I'd never really forgiven him for what he did in season four.
I wonder if this is more like, obviously he's going back to Cersei, and that's reason number, you know, without Cersei, he doesn't go back to King's Landing and leave Brienne in the first place. But is it more of like, damn, I kind of like, did he realize that he's taking advantage of Brienne a little bit? You know, like, is it in him at all that he realizes that he's not good for her and that, like, it is better if he leaves?
I think that's certainly the case. I think that that's definitely a part of it, at least on the character side of things. I think there's a part of him that knows he will never love Brienne the way he needs to fully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll always be holding on to a part of him that belongs to his twin sister, you know? So I think that's part of it. I don't think it's the whole of it, you know?
It's both. Like, it's he is just kind of a shitty dude as well.
And like, it's mentioned with Tyrion, you know, earlier in the season. You've always known who she is and you loved her anyway. That was part of what he said, you know, at the end of this arc, you know, Brienne's like, don't go, like, you don't need to do this. And he's, she's terrible and so am I, or something like that, you know, like,
yeah,
he's kind of just accepting, I think, denying who he is becoming to be who he's always been. And I think it's a shit route to end the character arc on. I think it's fucking terrible. I think it's horrendous. However, my other thing is that I truly do not like Jamie and Brienne together. Like, I don't want.
Yeah. I don't think that is the happy ending. You know, I think.
So it's.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
That they took this step at all, you know?
Like, Cersei's weird. It's like you hate her, but you like her at the same time just because she's so good at what she does. Like, just. But, like, obviously the things that she does, I do not agree with. So I hate her as, like, ethically, morally, very much so. And so she's always kind of, like, the – you don't want to root for her in the show. At, like, the end, you would kind of like to see her fail.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely. You want to see her die.
The one thing – I guess two. She cares about two things, one in a group, family. It's her children, one, but Jamie – it's kind of one as well. I don't know. It does. It seems that Jamie kind of trumps the children sometimes, and the children trump Jamie. I don't know. It kind of goes back and forth. But you would think that, like, you deprive Cersei of the one thing she wants at her death, which is to be with Jamie. Like, that's all they care about, is to be together at the end. And you give them that. Like, you actually give them the one thing that they, like, want. And it's... like, I think it hits way harder if you realize all the bad shit they did ended up letting them not have what they want. You know, I don't know. Like, it's, look at the bad shit they do. They did not get the life they wanted, and it all turned out being shit. But I guess they die, so, like, they are dead.
The other side of it, yeah.
But I don't know. It's just, to end the arc,
like,
this way.
Here's the thing, is that, like, Jamie, I don't like Jamie by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's a shit dude and shit, like, just a terrible guy. Mm. So it's fascinating to, like, he should have never gone south. That's the, like, he should not have gone back to King's Landing. He left. That should have been fucking it. You know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's just to back on that storyline. One of those things that maybe over the course of a 10 episode season or two separate seasons pays off. It might be like, you get more time showing that he will never be able to commit to Brienne the way that he could with Cersei. all you see is him commit to Brienne and then backtrack on that commitment. Like,
yeah,
literally within, by the end, like by halfway through this episode, they're like domesticated.
Yeah, that is.
They're like hanging out together. They're just like chilling in the fucking courtyard. You know, like it's like
they sleep together like every night now. Like they're just, yeah.
So, and I'm like, it's the fact that we literally go from them not being together to them being fully blown together to him being like, I can't do this. I'm leaving. Like it's just that might be the storyline that suffers the most from the pacing because it literally all happens in this episode.
Yeah, it's very fast. Very, very, very fast.
The only other episode you could argue it even begins to happen in is episode 2. And that's, even that...
It's very slight. Just looks at like each other and like, hey, will you fight for me? Yeah, I'll fight. Or I'll think about it.
And
it's
they're
like,
warriors.
It's like,
you know, they fight together. That is like, they've come a long way. They here they are now. I want to fight beside you. You are who I want to fight beside. You've protected me. I've protected you. Like, there's clearly a love there, but to take it to the level they do, if it was, like, just a one-night stand, it then paints Jamie in a bad light, because then he's with a virgin who he's decided was worth one night.
That's why if you look at it through the lens of Brienne, it sucks.
It sucks no matter
what. Like, every time. Yeah. The
only way it plays out good is if they stay together. And I wouldn't like that. You know, like, that's so it's a bizarre situation. So, anywho, just a massive fumble of a storyline in season 8 is, did my microphone disconnect by any chance or am I good?
You're good.
I hit my table in it.
Yeah, gotta be careful with mine. Camera and all, but anyway.
Anywho, we move on to the next attempt at a sexual encounter where Daenerys Targaryen arrives at Jon Snow's bedchambers, where he's like, he's basically like, I'm so sorry, you know, so sorry for everything that's happened. I'm sorry about Jorah, but if he could have chosen a way to die, he would have chosen to die the way he did. And she observes that Jorah did love her, but not the way that she loves Jon. She wasn't capable of it. And I love that even before she, like, kind of, when she walks in, she's like, are you drunk? And he, like, stands up and stumbles. He's like, no. Okay, maybe a little. It's a funny, funny little moment. But the two of them, what's up?
You know, like, she's testing him a little bit. She's like, okay, let's see how he feels, like, how he feels about us. About everything right now, let's just see. But like, a big part of the equation that I think is just lost is like, this isn't a time like for their affection. Like, she's crying. She is like in a state of like emotional distress, and she's trying to like, she's drunk and pissed and like, just, I don't know. It's not like they had like a fun game that they played right before and they were talking sexual things and like it was going down that route and they had this little playful, let's take off each other's shirt. No, it's like, hey, we're talking about heavy things. We're also talking about maybe you taking the throne away from me. Let me kiss you real quick to see if you love me. And then it's like, sorry that there's like more things going on right now and I can't commit to this kiss and that also you're my aunt.
It's rough. It's rough. You know, she pulls him in after the, you know, he did love me, but not the way that I love you. They proceed to kiss passionately and are on their way to undressing each other, but John stops himself and John walks away, faces the corner, and Daenerys laments, you know, I wish you never told me. If I didn't know, I'd be happy right now. I try to forget, and tonight, for a while, I did. And then I saw them gathered around you. I saw the way they looked at you. I know that look. So many people have looked at me that way. But never here. Never on this side of the sea. Mm-hmm. And John replies, you know, I don't want it. I never want it.
You will always be my queen.
You'll always be my queen.
My queen. What else can I say?
I don't know what else I can say.
I've said it so many times before. He's like, just, you know, he's just, he is a man of honor, and people just, I don't know. I guess they just forget Daenerys, that.
You know, she argues, you know? You she didn't want to be point. King in the North.
Yeah. She has a very valid point. You didn't want to be Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. You didn't want to be King of the North. You didn't want to be Aegon Targaryen. Sorry, it's just kind of
who
you are. Yeah, you're just kind of how it happens. Doesn't matter if that's what you want. It is the people around you. It is the Stilgar, you know. Like, who's like John Stilgar? Maybe Tormund a little bit. Yeah, yeah, like,
Madman.
This guy dies. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, I think Tormund's kind of the Stilgar of this universe, but yeah, it's not him, you know, it's not really coming from Jon, but he doesn't want it. But, you know, you think, like, deep down, you know, he says he doesn't want it, but, like, deep, deep down, you know that he's, like, he knows that since that he is leading, the things that he thinks are right actually are happening, you know, sort of thing. So it's like, I think he finds like some solace in it, like deep down, you know, he's like, if it has to be someone at least.
I mean, like,
you know.
I think that that's fair. I think we're talking deep down though.
Mm-hmm. He never shows any of that, like, whatsoever.
No, I mean, like, it's, I think the Army of the Dead has been dealt with. He's fucking done. That is the only thing he's been concerned about. He was handed leadership and he was like, fine, I'm going to use this to defeat the Army of the Dead.
Mm.
That is what his goal was, you know? So, like, now that that's fulfilled, and now that, and previously, maybe there was a possibility he could have been the king consort. I think he could have been okay with being an advisor to Daenerys. Like, okay, you know, maybe this is something that can happen. But then he's told she's his fucking aunt.
Out
so now he's like, truly, yeah. I don't want any of it. I'm fucking done. You know, like, so I think that there is a certain solace to be taken in that if the worst comes to worst, at least it'll be me. You know, like, but
oh, I guess
God,
I wasn't meaning like the Iron Throne. I mean, just like all the stuff he's done so far. Like, not that eventually he'll be the one taking the seat, but just like as far the things he's done as a leader so far. He says he's hated all of it, but like, I think there is a little bit of like at least
there's a little pride to take in what's been done. You know,
yeah,
but. I think you could say that for any leader, like any great achievements. I mean, he's had to do bad shit. You know, he's had to kill people. He's had to, I mean, he's been in like three fucking battles since he took office. No,
big ones too.
Yeah. Like, and I think three points. Is underselling it. He was commander. When wasn't he Lord Commander at the time that he went to Hardhome? So like,
or they were maybe voting, or like he just became maybe Lord Commander. Yeah, I think he
became Lord Commander earlier that season because he's killed two episodes later.
Hardhome definitely battle there, but like also Craster's Keep, like that is, it's not a battle, but like having to just do that, go north of the Wall, take care of all that, come back.
He has died.
Yeah. He got stabbed. We don't know how many times exactly, but a lot in the heart and died. Tormund's right. Yeah, Tormund's right.
Bro, he's done.
He's different. Yeah.
You know, she says, what are you going to do then? And he says, I'll refuse. You are my queen. I don't know what else I can say. And Daenerys tells him, he can say nothing. Never tell anyone who he really is. You know, she wants it to be the way that it was. And Jon clasps her hands in his and says, I gotta tell Sansa and Arya, you know, they are my family. And Daenerys is like, nope, you can't. Sansa will press your claim and we'll try to get you on the Iron Throne. It's a guarantee. And Jon says, Sansa won't do that. But Daenerys warns him, she's not the same girl you knew. And she's absolutely right. Sansa will do this. Sansa 100%. Will press for Jon to be king. Yeah. And John believes he owes Sansa and Arya the truth, but Daenerys begs him not to tell, saying the truth will destroy them. And John insists it won't. You are my queen. Nothing will change that, and they are my family. We can live together. And Daenerys tells him, we can. I just told you how.
I told you how. Yeah, that was... Ooh. Yeah, she's leading with fear. And this is the thing right here. Like, I think this is the snap. She fully realizes, you know, the night was already bad. She's drunk. But then hearing it from John kind of himself of not agreeing with her immediately, of not being like, okay, no, this will be a secret. I will be, you know, you're the queen. I'll be an advisor. We can marry, whatever. It's going to be all good. No, she's like, I see where this is going. It's inevitable. John, you're too fucking goated, you know, in this area. You're just the guy.
People fucking follow you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of how it is.
You're drawn to him.
She would have just stayed in Essos, man. You know, that's what, like, I kept coming back to is she just would have stayed on over there, ruled for a little bit. Maybe John does take up the Iron Throne. He breaks the wheel himself, and then they marry. Essos and Westeros come together for the first time ever. But instead, we get a little bit different of a story. The wheel was broken, but maybe not in the way we thought.
Here's the thing. The tension and drama that they created in the final season in terms of, like, scale and impact. If it was a happy ending, it would have felt bad.
Yeah, I guess you can't really. Something's got to happen. Like, some... It was going to be war, and war's mm-hmm. never... There's never a happy ending, even, you know, with anything war. I guess there could have been... I don't know. It is such a complicated ending that when you even start to come up with, like, oh, here's how I would have done it, and then you're like, you have to think of so many other factors that...
Like, that's why, I mean, like, they had a difficult fucking job.
Yeah.
It's just, they had 6 episodes to do it, which was fucking impossible. That was not going to happen. So, we get what we get. But, the next day, Daenerys, Jon, and their remaining leaders hold a war council around a large map of Westeros. Apart from the destruction of most of the Dothraki, Grey Worm says that about half the Unsullied were killed in the battle. Jon says that about half of the Northern and Vale armies were destroyed as well. And I like the neatness of that. They're just like, how about half of them, you know?
Fuck it. Yeah.
Half our forces are gone.
Yeah, just taking the pucks off. And yeah, they're gone. Like, I love Grey Worm just kind of being like, yes, half are gone. And it's just kind of like sad. It's also like, oh, damn, that was like, put very bluntly, but also like, shit, like, holy fuck, we lost half of our army.
They lost a lot. But Varys begins to update them on the situation in the south using map markers. The Golden Company has just arrived in King's Landing, delivered by Euron Greyjoy's fleet, reinforcing Cersei's position. Daenerys says they must attack King's Landing and rip Cersei out root and stem. And Tyrion warns her that a direct assault on King's Landing would result in so many civilian casualties that it would make the small folk hate her. And they must once again try to encircle Cersei, starving out the city until the commoners revolt against her, as they did against Joffrey not too long ago. And Varys points out that Daenerys is gaining allies in other places as well. The new Prince of Dorne is formally declared for her and against Cersei, and while they have received news that Yara Greyjoy has successfully retaken the Iron Islands themselves, while her uncle Euron's fleet has been away in the east. And Daenerys insists that they must attack Cersei now, as the only reason she is considered a queen at all is because she physically controls the greatest symbol of power, the Iron Throne itself. They must take the capital city in order to defeat Cersei, as without it, she is nothing. And Sansa counters that they are not in a strong position to immediately mount a full-scale offensive. The men have been left exhausted, many of them are wounded, they'll fight better if they have time to rest and recuperate. And she's like, it just so happens half of them died, so now I can feed everybody.
I guess one problem got solved.
If we need to take our time, which we can't because there's 6 episodes, we can, you know, like, and it sucks that mm-hmm. some decisions in the show are made because we don't have a lot of runtime left, you know, like,
Yeah, it is a tough back because they do have to end, like, they have to get to an end. But why? Why? Like, what was the thought process of, let's speed it up? Like, why? That's what made the
everyone
show
was
so
done.
Good. Like, that's,
everyone was done. It's so funny. Nobody wanted, like, it seemed.
It's just to make 4 more episodes.
It's probably,
I guess,
not that
it
much, but
yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, budgetary, probably. The 6 episode season was the most expensive season of the show.
Okay, damn. Yeah, that's.
And other seasons had fucking 10 episodes, and it was the most expensive season of the show. So, like, it's a lot of money, but regardless, Daenerys tells her, asks her how much time, and Sansa says she'd need to talk to the officers first. And Dany tells her, I came north to fight alongside you at great cost to my armies and myself. Now that the time has come to reciprocate, you want to postpone. But Sansa pointedly reminds Daenerys that this is the same for both the Northmen armies and her armies. You know, I'm not just trying to protect myself. I'm trying to protect your people, too. They can't be riding very great after that at all. And Daenerys tells Sansa that the longer she waits, the more time Cersei has to gather new strength and new allies. Just as she recruited Euron in the Golden Company. And Jon interjects that the North will honor its allegiance to Queen Daenerys, whom he has bent the knee to. And they will just have to leave the badly wounded back home and march south with a smaller army. And at this, Sansa and Arya exchange a look. It is decided that Jon and Davos will lead all of the surviving Northmen and Vale forces and the bulk of the surviving Dothraki and Unsullied forces south down the King's Road, while a smaller force of Unsullied return via ship from White Harbor to Dragonstone, along with Daenerys and her 2 remaining dragons. From Dragonstone, just across Blackwater Bay from King's Landing, Daenerys can blockade Cersei by sea and ultimately stage a final attack. And Brienne of Tarth wishes to stay at Winterfell to defend the Stark sisters, and Jaime Lannister will stay with her as well. And Daenerys declares to the War Council that this will be the last war they have to fight in the Seven Kingdoms, adding all of them. It will end all of the wars. And Daenerys and Sansa exchange a tense look.
A bar, a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, we fought the Great War, now let's fight the last war. That's pretty confident, you know? You're like, I guess, like, that is her whole thing. She is breaking the wheel, but putting it that way was kind of cool. I don't know. I didn't really remember, like, the last war. That didn't stick out to me before.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a great idea. And, Daenerys and her advisors leave, but Arya's like, hey, John, can you hang back for a second? And in the Godswood, the 4 surviving Stark children gather in private. John is irritated with his sisters. You understand we'd all be dead if not for her. We'd be corpses marching down to King's Landing. And Sansa replies that Arya is the one who killed the Night King. But John reminds Sansa that Daenerys' men gave their lives to fight the undead. Sansa says she won't forget that, but this doesn't mean she wants to bend the knee to Daenerys. John says, we already have.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah, Sansa, she loves her independence, but it kind of,
it's already been done. And Arya says that she respects Jon's decision. He did the right thing, and Sansa is taken aback by this. Like, yo, what the fuck? I thought we were doing something here. But Arya still sees Jon for who he is, he's honorable. He sticks to his word. He does what he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
She says
we needed her army too. She was like, yeah, without her army, we were fucked. So
we were going to lose. We were going to lose if it was not for her. Like, that's certain. It is the way it has to be, but she says she doesn't trust Daenerys. And Jon tells Arya she doesn't know Daenerys yet. And Arya goes, I'll never know her. She's not one of us. And Jon's like, well, if you only trust the people you grew up with, you won't make many allies. And Arya says, I don't need allies, I ride with y'all, and that's it. And she stresses that they are the last of the Starks, the last of Ned Stark's children, and they must remain loyal to each other. And weighed down by the truth, Jon grimly says that he has never been a Stark, and Sansa urges Jon that he is as much Ned Stark's child as they are.
while Arya lovingly insists that she is her brother, not a bastard brother or a half brother. She loves him completely.
I love Bran here.
It's up to you.
It's your decision. You made it your decision there, Bran. By saying it's your decision, it's basically...
Yeah, Sansa and Arya aren't going to let that shit go, bro.
He basically said, guess what? You'll never believe this about Jon.
Yeah.
And then just, like, stayed quiet. You know, he's like, all right, Jon, it's your decision. And they're like,
They're like, what's that mean?
What does that mean? And he's like, okay.
Like, swear for me. Okay. You gotta swear.
Yeah.
Like, religiously swear. Go to the heart tree and swear before the gods. Like, do that for me. And, you know, that they will never tell anyone else the secret. And Sansa and Arya ultimately swear at a loss for words. And Jon's like, all right, Bran, tell them.
He's like, I did it before. I've done it one time. I'm done. Like, he's like, I'm not doing that again.
Fucking sucks. I hate it.
He's like, just tell him in your robotic way, Bran. I don't care. Just drop
the
bomb.
Fucking computer over there. Yeah. Let him know. But later that night, the Lannister brothers are drinking at a local inn of the winter town outside the castle, and Jaime has told Tyrion of his new relationship with Brienne. And the very drunk Tyrion says, he's happy. I'm happy for you. I'm glad that now you can finally climb for it.
That was nice. I don't know. He's, you know how long it's been since I've been wanting to make doll jokes, or I don't know. It was nice. Just
incredible.
These drunk fun, man. It's, I don't know. It is nice to get this a little bit.
And suddenly, Bronn bursts through the door, pointing Joffrey's crossbow at them. And Bronn tells them that Cersei hired to assassinate both of them. Tyrion, too drunk to care, does not take Bronn seriously. As if he was going to kill them, he would have already done it. Only for Bronn to punch him in the nose so hard he nearly breaks it. And Tyrion implies, you broke my nose. He's like, no, I didn't. It's like, how would you know that? He's like, I broke enough noses. I know what it sounds like.
He says, I've been breaking noses since I was your size. Oh, man. Like, okay. Like, usually short jokes don't work and like they usually fall flat. But like, that's
probably the best short joke of the entire show.
Bronn did it. Bronn actually, Tyrion was he actually couldn't defend this one. He's like, fuck, man.
Okay.
He's like, shit. Like, damn. Bronn, a businessman, you know, the art of the deal here, you know, he's like, yeah, Cersei's giving me one thing, but fuck, I saw those dragons, man, and, she's fucked, and she can't pay up, so. I'm coming to you guys, just in case. I got plan A, I got plan B.
Mm-hmm.
What was Cersei planning on giving him? What was the...
Storm's End.
Okay, that's right, yeah. Storm's End, and he's... No. That power corrupts absolutely with this guy. That he just never stops. Or maybe greed for Bronn, I feel like. This dude just can never quite get enough.
Oh, no, yeah, no, absolutely not.
And
Tyrion's like, what did I tell you once? That if you know, Cersei offered you something or somebody offered you something, I would double it. And he's like, what the fuck is double River Run? It's River Run, not Storm's End, like the seat of the Frey House.
The twins. Okay.
Or the Tullys. They control both, so the Lannisters do now. But
mm-hmm. Okay.
And Tyrion's like, Highgarden.
Double that, yeah.
The Reach. And Jaime's like, no, fuck no. No cutthroat can rule Highgarden. And Bronn's like, oh, how the fuck do you think the Great House has started, bro? They were all cutthroats. Managed to see some land and castles, and all of a sudden they're fucking lords, and the grandsons call themselves that. But Tyrion assumes Bronn, he will be granted Highgarden, and he leaves promising that if Tyrion doesn't hold up his end of the bargain, the next time Bronn will come back and shoot first. With no warning or negotiation, and after he leaves, Jaime asks if they're seriously going to give Bronn Highgarden, to which Tyrion only says he won't worry about it for now, as, you know, that assumes they will all survive the final war against Cersei. I think that's when he delivers the line, you know, maybe Cersei will kill us and all our problems will be solved, you know?
We gotta get there first. Yeah. So let's just get there. Does Bronn... Does he actually get Highgarden at the end?
He becomes Master of Coin.
So he's just in King's Landing, or like, does he go somewhere? I feel like he got a castle.
I mean, they don't show it.
They don't? I feel like there's... Oh, no, that was before whenever Jamie was married to the second oldest daughter and he was, or second youngest, and he's like, yeah, I'll just kill the old one.
He doesn't show up again until, I think, the council scene. I think that's it. Yeah. I don't even know that he's at the meeting where they decide who the king is. I think he just gets picked to be master of coins separately.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't know why I thought I remember, like, Bronn having, like, some shot of him walking up to his castle. But I think that was just before, when he was promised that by Cersei mm-hmm. before or something. I don't know what castle that was, but, okay.
Sometime Sandor Clegane rides away from Winterfell down the King's Road, and he soon realizes he is being followed by Arya Stark, who rides up to his side on her horse. He says that he still has unfinished business in the south, and Arya only says that she does too. And Sandor says he doesn't think he'll be coming back to Winterfell, and Arya says she doesn't think she will either.
Yeah, little voice break on that too. I don't know, she was I forgot maybe the verbiage, but she was, I don't know. You could tell the Hound, like, I kind of like his story. I always kind of hated how he was like, no, I'm still just going to go kill my brother. It's whatever, revenge, I mean, like, even all through my shit. Thing, but it's like, that's his whole life. Like, and he says, you know, later on, he's like, it's my whole life. But I like that Arya is a little hesitant, even though that she's like, no, I do have unfinished business. She is breaking at it still. And I don't know if that's just Maisie Williams' performance of it. Who knows? Maybe she was told to do that. I don't know. But I do love how they're kind of it, like, I got some hesitancy from her saying that she has unfinished business still.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I dig that. I think that would be a good, I didn't really get that from Maisie Williams, but I kind of took this scene to be very, very face value, which I appreciated. You know, I like the idea of them going south together. It's really cute that they're one last ride sort of thing. I thought that was a great idea.
Maybe at this point she's not fully there, like, realizing that, like, okay, this isn't the path she wants. It really is kind of the final moment when the Hound's like, hey, you'll die if you follow me, sort of thing. But I think maybe here she's still kind of putting on that front, because she's like, yeah, no, I hate crowds. No, I hate being the hero. I hate all that shit. So, and that is actually her. It's not a front that she's putting on. It is actually who she is.
But yeah, Sansa stands on the castle wall, still in shock from the revelation of Jon's parentage, and she gazes at Daenerys' dragons flying in the distance, where she's trying to get them back up to full health. You know, Rhaegal's having a tough time. He's got a hole in his wing and stuff. Invisibly teary-eyed, Sansa is only half aware of Tyrion as he approaches her. And still numb, Sansa asks, why her? But Tyrion insists that Daenerys will be a good queen, and if not, Jon Snow will still be Warden of the North under her, which is a good arrangement for the Starks. With Jon in the capital, I love that he's like, he'll be Warden of the North, but he'll be King Consort. You've seen what's going on here.
You will have all the power, Sansa.
You will be the true power in the North. I'd feel much better about the future if I left here today believing you were allies. And Sansa wonders what Tyrion is worried about, as their armies are going down south and Daenerys still has her dragons. And Tyrion says Sansa doesn't have to be her friend, but she doesn't see the need to provoke Daenerys. At which Sansa is like, oh, you're fucking scared. You're afraid of her. And Tyrion's like, yeah, you know, all capable leaders must inspire some fear, you know?
Is that true? Is this true?
Yeah. I think at this time, yeah.
Yeah.
He's in denial about how much she's depending on fear. Mm-hmm. You know, he says she needs to inspire a bit of fear. She inspires much more than a bit of fear.
Yeah. I think
he is afraid.
The idea is,
she's threatened his life like 3 fucking times.
Damn. Yeah, I guess maybe that is just sort of that is not just the business you get into in your Hand of the King. I don't think. I think that is just, or Hand of the Queen here. I think that is just on the queen or king at the time.
I will take the pin off you and I'll give it to someone. Like, every time he fucks up, she's like, if you do that again, it's the last time you fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good. Yeah, I think the idea is you lead with fear, but as little of fear as you possibly can. Like, you use it as sparingly as you can. And she, it's her sort of default when things don't work. So not exactly the route you want to go, but yeah,
just a little fear.
A whole lot. Dragon. I mean, she has the nuclear equivalent of the world at the time. You know, it's like she just has dragons. Two right now. Eventually, you know, well, whatever. I think this is another just fucking what the fuck. Eventually, but he's getting back to full health. He's eating. Look at him fly again. Look, we're doing great. You know, he's alive. He's doing good.
But an anxious Sansa says she doesn't want Jon to go to King's Landing. You know, the men in her family don't do well there. Her father, grandfather, and uncle were all killed in the
capital.
That's
true. This is fair. Good point, Sansa.
Yeah, so Tyrion weakly says, you know, he believes in her. But with a pained look, Sansa then asks him what he'd say if there was someone else, someone better. And in the castle courtyard, Jon Snow is getting ready to leave south with the army while Tormund and Samwell Tarly come to say goodbye. And Tormund says that he is also leaving, returning north with his people. You know, we're going to go to Castle Black and beyond. You know, we don't like you southern folk, you know, and the ladies don't like me down here either. Jon says, you know, the free folk are welcome in the north, but Tormund says that the lands north of the wall are their home. And when Jon says, this is farewell, Tormund says, you never know. You've got the north in you. The real north.
Gotta feel good. You know, that's gotta feel good.
That's a cosign. That's a hard cosign from a true wildling. And the hug is so intimate. I swear.
The wrap around, like,
cupping his neck. When John agrees to go north, he's agreeing to take a walk on the wild side, you know?
Yes, dude, he's like, man, my life is over. Yeah, I gotta see what life's about. No, maybe that is the headcanon. Yeah, that is the spinoff.
This is another reason that Tormund's absolutely my favorite character of the episode. I love this interaction. And I was half tempted to go with, I think it's Christoph. Heaveshu is the actor who plays Tormund, because he does really good in all the scenes he's in. Like, his comedic timing's incredible. What he does in this scene is really, like, it's really weighty. It's meaningful. I dug it. But Jon's direwolf ghost is also present, and he was badly wounded in the battle, having lost his right ear, but managed to survive and is up and about. And Jon tells Tormund to take Ghost with him. A direwolf has no place in the southern kingdoms and would be happier in the northern forests where other direwolves still live. And Gilly then says goodbye to Jon with a hug, and he realizes that she is pregnant again, now with Samwell's child. And she says that if it's a boy, we want to name him Jon.
And I hope it's a girl.
Yeah.
Come on, Jon. Can you like one time just be, you know, I it's just the most. Of course he's going to say that, you know, of course. But no, this another cute moment.
I love when John enters Uncle John mode, when he's like, whenever he actually, like, they don't show him and Gilly bond by any stretch of the imagination. But earlier this season, whenever Sam was about to tell him that he's a Targaryen, he was like, he was like clearly fucked up. And John was like, is Gilly okay? Is little Sam
that's
all right?
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Like, it's he clearly cares about them a great deal. So I loved this little interaction. Sam and John share a long tell them they were the best friends each other ever had. And John then arrives at the castle as Tormund, Ghost, Sam, and Gilly look on.
North gang right there. That's like the northern gang.
It's a squad right there.
That's the thing. This it has good moments. Like there are good moments, and this was
we get a particularly good moment here. Whereas Daenerys's fleet sails south, Tyrion meets with Varys in a chamber below decks, having just repeated what Sansa told him. And Jon Snow is really the secret legitimate son of Daenerys's older brother Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark, and thus the true rightful heir to the Iron Throne.
Tyrion wonders aloud at how the past 20-odd years of wars, from Robert's Rebellion to the War of the Five Kings, all in one way or another reverberated from Lyanna choosing Rhaegar instead of Robert. And they wonder what would happen if the truth came out. And Varys acknowledges that the North would obviously switch to support Jon. Sansa would make sure that the Vale would as well, instantly losing Daenerys 2 of the Seven Kingdoms. And Tyrion asks why they don't just pursue the easy solution, a marriage alliance. And Varys rebukes that Daenerys is Jon's aunt. Tyrion's like, well, that's never really bothered Targaryens before. And Varys is like, yeah, but Jon's a Northerner. How do they feel about that in the North?
Yeah, how do they feel? Oh, yeah, dang, that is right. Incest is kind of going out of style, I guess. Yeah, strangely enough, for some reason, just not quite in anymore. But, yeah, I mean, it makes the most sense here, you know? I mean, they would be a power couple, that is for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Damn, would it be kind of crazy to see if, you know, how that would have worked out if she didn't go off the deep end and Jon is kind of there to be the one to tame her, mm-hmm. her deep end, you know, desires and stuff. But that's no, I don't
not
know.
Good.
This
it's not good.
I like these conversations though. This one's a precursor to my scene, that it will eventually get to, but I love like just when they get down to just kind of the politic and the philosophy and all that sort of stuff. And this one,
oh yeah.
They're getting into it a little bit, but not quite the scene that I picked yet. But man, I don't know. I feel really bad about not remembering the funeral at the beginning, which is kind of nuts. But at least you gave it the nod, so I don't. I guess it has gotten one. But no other scene has like called out to me. Like you're right. Like the whole time, no other scene has been that one.
Yeah. Varys says, you know, he's starting to worry about Daenerys' state of mind with her growing isolation, and Tyrion goes, we are her advisors. It is our job to worry about her state of mind. And Varys kind of looks at him like, yeah, you know what I mean, though. And then above deck on the same ship, Missandei and Grey Worm hold hands as Dragonstone Island comes into view. Daenerys soars over the fleet on Drogon, accompanied by Rhaegal. And I love that Jon was like a little bit ago with Tormund. Tormund was like, oh, you're not riding the dragon south. He's like, nah, he's healing. He doesn't need my 160-pound frame on him.
Good call, actually. Great call.
Good little workaround.
He needs to heal.
Yeah. He can't handle any more weight, the flea-sized man Jon is on the back of a dragon.
Why didn't they just say, I'd rather be with my army? Like, why didn't Jon just be like, I'd rather be with you guys instead of just flying on a dragon? You know, like, it could have been that instead of he needs to heal. And then seconds later, in the two just...
What are we doing?
Two absolutely domed shots. I mean, just pinpoint accurate. Couldn't have been better. Two first shots, and then
ow, you know, like,
and then just they can't hit Drogon.
Nope,
at all. The bigger one, the not bigger possible. Target that's flying straight at them. But they, sorry.
This is the part in the. Behind the scenes, like the inside the episode, that is always so fucking deliriously funny. I believe it is David Benioff who says that, you know, Daenerys just kind of forgot about the Iron Fleet.
Huh?
They were literally brought up in the War Council about four scenes earlier.
Maybe D&D forgot about them.
They wrote about them earlier in the episode.
So what are they trying to say here? What are they?
Just they wanted to kill another dragon. So they wrote a thing where they were hiding behind rocks, an entire fleet that Daenerys couldn't see from up in the sky. They come to a point where, you know, they fire two bolts and then they emerge from beyond the rocks also.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
Oh, it's just terrible. It's awful.
Yeah,
genuinely fucking stupid.
The way Viserion dies.
Sure.
The Night King needed a dragon. This sort of makes sense. It's magic, whatever the fuck. I don't know. This was just...
That's
wow. If you're going to kill a dragon, one of three that we have total, you'd think it'd be a little more monumentous than just random shock to... You're like, wait, is he dying right here? You're like, holy shit, that first one, that doesn't look good. And then the second one, you're like, oh no, this dude's fucking...
Oh,
like,
he's fucking done.
Yeah, he's fucked.
Yeah, it goes from like the really triumphant, like... like Daenerys riding her dragon theme to oh fuck oh god damn
and Drogon being like like
what the fuck.
Poor Drogon, really just seeing both of his brothers just go down pretty brutally.
These new weapons are more numerous and much more powerful, being mounted onto the front of ships. Punching deep through Rhaegal's Ironheart scales, the first bolt in his chest is soon followed by a second to his wing. The injured dragon's blood-curdling roar of agony is silenced when a third bolt impales him through the throat.
Oh, there was the three?
So three. One of the second one hit his wings.
Yeah, good on him. Whoever these first three marksmen were, they're fucking good. But everyone else? Good.
Can't hit shit.
Plot armor. Drogon. Yeah. So.
The first bolt, so all that. Overwhelmed by the shock and blood loss, Rhaegal plunges into the sea, where he sinks beneath the surface of the water. And distraught and enraged, Daenerys tries to make an attack run with Drogon and Euron's ship, but all of the scorpions start raining bolts at her, and she barely manages to turn away and escape with her life. Euron's ships then target the ballistae of Daenerys' fleet, smashing them to splinters. Brilliant, brilliant naval weaponry. And Grey Worm urges Missandei to flee to safety by taking the skiff to shore, but they are soon overwhelmed and separated in the chaos. A sequence where Tyrion is trying to avoid getting hit, and shit just keeps flying past him, and stuff's destroyed around him. He jumps into the water, and then
he's like
a bonk on the head.
Fuck it, water. Yeah, he's like, I can't go anywhere else. Fuck it, gotta go to the water. Yeah, that was a little, I don't know. It kind of just felt like the same thing over and over. Like, he'd walk a couple steps, boom, walk a couple, boom. Like, it was like, I don't know, they could have... I thought it was cool, but, like, it seemed a little too repetitive. Like, I don't... Maybe switch it up. I guess it is just the chaos of everything, but I don't know. This, I felt like we had a sequence like this. Yeah, Euron, whenever he was attacking, like, with Theon Yara. And Yara on that, like, that naval battle was... so much fucking better. And this one, we have way cooler weapons. We have two dragons. One just died. And, like, I feel like this would be the naval battle that you would think would be the best one of the show. But it ended up, I don't know.
I mean, it ends up being superior firepower. Like, there's nothing personal about it. It can't be much more than this. They were ambushed. Yeah. They were overwhelmed. It's just like, what else are you going to do? But anywho, they wash up upon the shore, the survivors of the destroyed fleet. And Grey Worm stands ashore only to realize that Missandei isn't with them, and in horror, he calls out for her. But later on in King's Landing, Cersei Lannister gloats with Euron over their victory. From the Red Keep, Cersei watches the city gates as thousands of refugees flood into the city. Qyburn acknowledges that Cersei's true intention is proceeding as planned. Thousands of commoners are coming into the city to seek protection behind its walls from Daenerys' army, and when in truth, Cersei wants them as human shields. And she knows that Daenerys doesn't want to be seen as a tyrant, and the risk of heavy civilian casualties will deter her from making a direct assault. And Cersei feels that the Northern and Targaryen armies are so exhausted after fighting the White Walkers that she can regain the upper hand, gaining strength by the day with new allies such as the Golden Company. Cersei proudly declares that the lion will rule the land while the kraken rules the seas, and their child shall rule it all. And a surprised Euron looks to Qyburn, like, deadass.
Is this for real? Is this true? Mm-hmm. Yep, man. You did it. Good job.
Cersei then turns to Missandei, taken captive by Euron in the attack. brought before her in chains and sarcastically gloats, the breaker of chains indeed.
Ah, man, yeah, this one's just unfortunate. I mean, Cersei, like, it is the perfect play for Cersei. Like, I mean, absolutely, there really couldn't have been a more perfect play for her. Well, kind of doomed her, actually. Like, this, Daenerys was already on the way to going there, but this one was
Rhaegal dying and Missandei being taken captive, as it is portrayed in the next scene, is it. At Dragonstone, the furious and bereaved Daenerys meets with her remaining advisors in the chamber of the Painted Table. Grey Worm grimly says they should storm the capital city at once. We should kill him. We should kill him. And Varys says that this is a mistake, as Cersei has not kept it a secret that she has swelled the city with refugees to use as human shields. So not only are these not all just people from King's Landing, people have traveled from far and wide to get to King's Landing. He pleads that trying to remove Cersei's tyranny like this would in itself be an act of tyranny and turn the people of Westeros against her. Daenerys says she knows her purpose in this world, to remove tyrants, and she will tear out Cersei root and stem. And Tyrion agrees with Varys and insists that they must offer Cersei the option to flee Westeros with her life. Ignorant that Ned Stark once offered Cersei the same option, but she is convinced that you either win or you die. And with no middle ground, Daenerys, barely restraining her tears and her rage, nonetheless relents. Not because she thinks Cersei will ever surrender, but because she would look bad if she didn't at least go through the motions of offering it to her. And she delivers my favorite line of the episode, which is, I want the people to see. They should know who to blame when the sky falls upon them. She's already decided this is what she's going to do.
Dang, you're right. Yeah, why would she say that? Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, they should know who to blame. They should know who to blame when this happens. Because it's going to happen. And they should blame Cersei for it. Even though it'll be me doing it.
Wow. Maybe it was just actually hyping herself up until she could do it. Like, she's like, I'll start with the army. I'll start by getting my troops in. But I know what I'm doing. Like, I know what my mission is. She's like,
I think she tries to restrain it as much as she can. And then she's like, nah, fuck it. Everyone will know it was Cersei to blame when Daenerys brings the sky crashing down on King's Landing. And Tyrion and Varys offer no other option. They're like, fuck, okay. And later on, Tyrion and Varys meet alone in the throne room. And Varys outright questions if Daenerys is fit to rule. And if perhaps Jon Snow would make a better monarch. He's more temperate, appealing, and also a man, which to many lords in Westeros makes him an inherently better candidate. Even ignoring that by simple birth order, he outranks Daenerys. And Tyrion weakly tries to argue that Daenerys has to be strong and instill fear in her enemies. And Varys says that he will always act in the interest of the people, and thousands of innocents will die if Daenerys tries to attack Cersei. And Tyrion pointedly asks if he thinks Daenerys will accede if Jon says he wants to sit the Iron Throne instead of her. But Varys silently shoots him a look, obviously implying that he means they should assassinate Daenerys if she chooses to attack King's Landing. And Tyrion can only mutter that Daenerys will make the right choice. You know, we are talking about treason. That whole scene, it's really good. I love that scene.
Yeah, that is the scene I ended up going with. And I do realize that the funeral, it does hit harder. But I guess this one, Varys was my character for the episode for this moment as well. For him, like, standing up in front of Daenerys being like, hey, you told me. Or, like, I told you. Like, I would tell you if you're ever making a mistake, you're making a mistake. I'm true to my, like, Varys is maybe, like, actually the closest to Jon in the sense of, like, his honor is to the realm, and, like, nothing will trump that at all. Like, he will always fight for the realm, and he's, like, Tyrion is blinded by the fear and by, like, just
hoping he made the right choice.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want to be the hand of the king of
the person who massacres the kingdom, you know?
So
Eesh.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the only way to feel. But at Winterfell, Jaime Lannister arrives in the courtyard to see that Sansa Stark and Brienne have just received a message from Varys, informing them of the attack on Daenerys' fleet and the situation in the south. Cersei killed one of the dragons that Daenerys loves like children and took her close advisor captive. And Sansa Riley notes to Jaime that they will execute his sister for this, and she always kind of wished that she would get to see that. Which I loved that delivery.
Ooh, yeah, she doesn't care what she, you know, she's not holding back anymore. She's I love this. Yeah, I love this line from her, and makes Jaime all the more like, oh fuck,
I gotta die with my woman. Later that night, Jaime gets up out of bed from the bed he now shares with Brienne, and thinks long and hard, and Brianna wakes to find him gone, then rushes to catch him outside as he saddles a horse to return south to Cersei. And Brianna starts crying and pleads that he doesn't need to go to her, he is a good person now, and Jaime bitterly tells her that he isn't. He threw Brianna out of a window for Cersei, killed his cousin Alton to get back to her, and nearly killed every man, woman, and child in Riverrun for her. Brianna says that Cersei is hateful, to which Jaime responds, so am I, and rides out of the castle, leaving Brianna weeping.
Thank you, Gwendolyn Christie.
All contingent of the Unsullied escort, yeah. Daenerys Targaryen. No, I'm just kidding.
Thank you, Gwendolyn Christie, for the performance. But man, was this? Yeah, I think you're right. It's just we needed more time for Jaime's story to breathe. And if it does breathe, then this
and
maybe
it
works.
It makes Brienne's reaction just fucking pathetic. You know,
sad. Like this is just. All around just sad. Like it.
She's not pathetic. You know?
No, but she's always made to look it. Like she wanted Renly, but Renly's gay. Obviously, just not going to work there. She wants Jaime, but Jaime loves his twin sister. It's like she just can never, never win, but she's always given like the kind of top tier of, I don't know. She's always kind of. Been
she's got
after
the best
or
dudes
like
out here, yeah,
yeah, and yeah, it's just
like on paper,
mm-hmm.
Like,
she not many people can say they fuck Jaime Lannister. I think that's only Cersei,
literally Cersei,
yeah, actually, wow, that's actually, and yeah, Brienne and Cersei, that is it,
Yeah, anywho, a small contingent of the Unsullied escort Daenerys Targaryen and her advisors to approach one of the gates of King's Landing on the landward side opposite of the docks. And they see that the defenses have been drastically improved. Each of the city wall towers now has one of the anti-dragon ballistics that Qyburn developed. And Drogon, Daenerys' last remaining dragon, hangs back behind them on the ground, stalking back and forth in anger. Cersei Lannister stands atop the gatehouse with Euron Greyjoy, the Mountain, and the chained Missandei. And Tyrion Lannister approaches the gate to parley, and Qyburn comes out alone to speak with him. And Tyrion says that Daenerys asked for Cersei's unconditional surrender, to which Qyburn counters, "That's ironic. Cersei is asking for the unconditional surrender of Daenerys." It turns out that the Northern Targaryen armies have been badly depleted and exhausted by fighting the White Walkers, while Cersei has reinforced hers with the Golden Company. And their new would mean that it would be a risk to attack with the dragon and kill many innocent people. And despite Cersei's earlier betrayal in the dragon pit summit, Tyrion nonetheless walks closer, just marches right past Qyburn, which I really liked. Yeah. I like his voice.
It's like, this isn't going to get anywhere. Yeah, I understand.
He's just going to be spitting the fucking dogma at me, so I gotta, I gotta go talk to her. But he attempts to plead with Cersei once more, and Cersei gets the archers to get ready to shoot him. After a long pause of consideration, Cersei once more can't bring herself to do it. Why? I don't know.
At least I think this was just more of like a display of power. That like if she wanted to, and I love that like if like one of those archers just kind of like oops, like oh shit, so, I let go of my arrow. It's over. I wonder if like that's just ever happened in history, like to draw, like to have an army draw against some like someone. It takes one person to just kind of oopsie, you know, like that's gone down. But no, I guess I liked the moment of Cersei just kind of being like, you know, just a simple hand move. And I think that's always like that's real power there, and I think that's
where I think she's coming from, but she's considering it.
When
she puts down her hand, she's like, you know, it's kind of the same thing as what happened with the mountain earlier.
Yeah.
Because technically, he's broken the rules of engagement by marching past the representative. So now it's not technically breaking the rules of war. She perceives an attack from Tyrion, which it is not clearly, but she could always say that.
True. Technically, you know, she could kill him legally.
Yes.
Here, you know, rules of war.
According to the rules of war, at least how I perceive them to be. But,
yeah, no, she wants to start a war, and killing Tyrion would probably do that, but her other option is, I think, a little more surefire.
A little more affecting. She's like, I've already got a plan that'll probably get her pretty good. Desperate, Tyrion begs that she is not the monster she thinks she is, and that her one redeeming feature is that she's always loved her children. Cersei might prefer to go down in flames, dragging Daenerys with her, but it would be condemning her unborn baby to death. And they flash to Euron, who's like, hold the phone. How the fuck does he know that?
I guess I didn't. I didn't think about that.
Euron's like, wait a second.
I was just told this. Yeah, he's like, I was literally just told. What? And I'm the dad. What the fuck?
The fuck does he know? Either Euron's too big of a dumbass to realize who really, who really is the dad, or, he's just
I'll brush that off. Okay. That's weird.
Or again, the writers forgot. Who knows? But, Cersei pauses, thinks on it, and then quietly tells Missandei that if she has any last words, now is the time. And defiant, Missandei shouts, Dracarys! And with a nod from Cersei, the hulking Gregor decapitates Missandei with a single swing of a sword. And the way that Daenerys and Grey Worm, like, Daenerys marches forward, but Grey Worm was marching forward anyway, which I loved. And the performance from Jacob Anderson, where he turns away and breathes really heavy, is really strong. But I went Emilia Clarke, there are very, very few people who can do seething rage the way that she's able to capture it.
The little twitch on like the upper lip nose area, like
she's good at it. Yeah, and she also had that really moving moment with Jorah earlier in the episode. So I was like, she was my pick for her performance. But this one hurts. You know, this one actually did get me to tear up and cry a little bit, just because it's Missandei, man. If there's like anybody in the show who just like does not deserve that, it's Missandei. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so this was the last, this was it, you know, like, it was already going that way, but now it's fucking over, you know?
It's kind of like Cersei is wanting King's Landing to burn down almost a little bit. Like, she's like, well, if I'm not going to win, then it's like they'll go down with me.
I don't know. But she's very confident they've got this in the bag at this point.
You think?
Yeah. After they killed that dragon, it shows that they have the capability to kill the dragons. That is the only that's the only thing she even begins to be worried about. And now that they've proven that they can, she's like, oh, we're good. Their armies don't stand a chance against what we have now that they're fucked.
I guess I was of the mind that, like, there was always the idea that Daenerys is holding back. Like, if she wanted to, she could have gone through, done what she wanted to do long, long ago. Mm-hmm. So, like, and Cersei knows that. So that's why she knows she's safe, sort of thing, that she knows Daenerys is holding back. Mm-hmm. And that is her weakness. But now that that's no, I think that maybe this is why Rhaegal dies, to show that if she wanted to, this is all she needed. She just needed one dragon and the decision to actually do it. And I don't know. I love like the camera, like just staying on people like Tyrion, you know, like looking back at Daenerys, like knowing full well what's about to come. She turns away and he's like, all right, well, okay.
Peter Dinklage just really good at dejected. You know, like, fuck.
Oh, God. Yep, that's yeah. it. That's that, isn't it? He's really good at it. So, I mean, it was a really middling episode in terms of execution. I do like a lot of the stuff that happens. It's just that it's not done well. I think that the events have given more time, could have paid off in a really meaningful way. If this episode was, say, three episodes, it could be three really good episodes.
Yeah, that's why this breakdown is super long, and that's why like it took a long time to get through this episode, because like legitimately just so much happens here. And like usually breakdowns are not this long. Like, I don't know, like it, like I was just kind of scrolling down while you're reading, and then I'm like just checking in at to see where we were. Boom. Yeah, it just kept going. Yeah, it was insane. The death section though, man. Two absolute heavy hitters from the show. We got Rhaegal and Missandei. We'll say goodbye. Sad to say goodbye, but yeah. No, you're right. The things that happen, they're cool, but if it was spread out amongst at least two episodes, would have just been so much better.
It's really disappointing to be getting to this point and realizing that everyone's fucking right. Really blows. But
kind of
before we get to the rating, mm-hmm. go ahead and do the plugs real quick, if you would. Head to patreon.com/pennybloompod, where you'll find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like. So much stuff over there. It's been a lot of fun to do, and I have a great time doing it. We do, and I do a lot of writing over there as well, which you can have access to for $1.50 a month. All that money goes back into making sure I can put this podcast on. Cost me money, and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Head to Twitter, follow at Penny Bloom Pod, follow on Instagram and TikTok while you still can, at Penny Bloom Podcast. go watch us on YouTube. Got a lot of fun stuff. You know, you get to, there are some things. I try to do my best to talk out loud as much as I can when I'm imitating or expressing or, you know, but there's certain things that will slip through the cracks if you're only listening. You can watch, you can see our expressions, you can see what I'm doing. You can see what we're doing, and I think it helps. You know, if that's not your cup of tea, it's not your cup of tea. No biggie. But if you do have an interest in watching, you should. You should look up Penny Bloom Podcast on YouTube. Check us out there. Yeah, leave a 5-star rate and review and download wherever you might be listening. Helps us a lot. But with that, we can go ahead and give this episode a rating. How are you feeling?
Yeah. Well. It's not last episode. It's not a 10 enjoyment. I know that. I know that for sure. It is not episode 2, a 9.25. Episode 1, we're at a 7.5. I think we're getting
there. You
give
episode 1 a 7.5?
Mm-hmm. Enjoyment.
Okay. That's tough. That's tough.
I don't know. Like, I don't. I do. Like, it's a lot of my gripes are from the critical side of things. But the critical gripes.
It absolutely affected my enjoyment of it.
Crazy. Yeah. It drops
like
it by a lot.
When we look at Rhaegal's death, when we look at Jaime leaving Brienne, when we look at. You know, Missandei's capture and ultimate demise, which I don't think is done poorly particularly, but it's done quick. It's done quick. She gets captured and she's dead like 7-8 minutes later.
Rhaegal is healing and then he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon after. Yeah, it's very, very, they like to completely go against what they are saying. It's just they want shock.
They love subverting expectations, and that
like
pisses me off.
They think that that is what makes good TV. Like, honest, I don't know. It's what it seems to be.
That's all D&D bank on is shock value and subverting expectations. That's all they wanted out of these last out of this last season. It's why Arya is the one who kills the Night King. It's why Daenerys burns the city down. It's why Jon kills Daenerys. It's why Bran ends up on the throne. It's why Rhaegal dies suddenly. It's why Missandei dies suddenly. It's why all of these things happen is because they're trying to get you to go, what? And on first viewing, maybe that works. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Even that didn't work for everybody. You know? It's just a lot. So I think that this episode is kind of a perfect encapsulation of the final season. A lot of good ideas, a lot of good thoughts, but the execution's just not there.
On a regular season, we're not even halfway through. And we are more than halfway through with this episode. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, I don't know. I think I'm at like a
7-5.
I don't know. Like, I'm like kind of like, there are some parts that I do like, but then there's a lot. Well, maybe I'm not that low yet. You know, maybe.
I'm like, are you projecting a little bit of what's to come onto this episode?
Mm-hmm. Where we ended this episode, the things that I did hate, Rhaegal and Jaime, I could say like comfortably, those two things I think should have been handled a little differently.
Here's my thing. It's kind of jarring that we gave the first episode a 7-5. Now that I think about it, maybe I do like that one more.
Let's see what happened.
Not a lot. Yeah. Not by a lot. Like, I enjoy this episode to a degree.
It's not as much as episode one, though, I don't think. No, like, I don't know. Either. I think it's...
Where my gut took me this week was like a six to a seven, which I don't think I liked the first episode that much more than it, which is why I'm like,
I see.
That's an interesting place to be, but I'd be cool.
The
with
good parts we do get the feast and the drunk and all the happy the
funeral. There are very good moments, and I do enjoy those character beats. I do a great deal, but the Tyrion and Varys interactions are really good. Some of their last interactions, you know, like those are really strong.
Okay. Yeah, I think of. 5 is way too, that's crazy. Now that I was around there, that is,
I would say 6. I would say 6-5 or 6-7-5.
Yeah, a whole point below episode 1.
I mean, episode 1, Jon learns who he is. He rides a dragon for the first time. Daenerys is in Winterfell for the first time. I mean, it's a real setup episode to be sure, but
we're not dealing with like very like pacing issues and a lot of other things.
No,
I think
they let the story breathe.
Yeah, I think maybe a full point below actually kind of works there. I think it does make sense. Yeah.
I mean, we weren't nice to the first episode critically, if I recall correctly.
A 6.
5-7-5, 5-5.
Yeah, it's 6 is the ceiling. I think like. Yeah,
I think it's just above middle of the road. Like, I think it's like it's still incredibly well shot. It's incredibly acted. The score's still working. The editing's good. Like, the thing is that everything is firing on all cylinders except for the writing,
which is arguably.
I mean, it's an extremely important part. The thing is that television and movies are a different medium. You know, you can have just an okay story in a movie with a brilliant visual experience, a brilliant audio experience, a brilliant editing, brilliant. Like, you can have all those things in a movie and it's much better than Game of Thrones, where the entire show has been basically prided on its writing. It was at one point the best written show of all time. So if you fall off this fucking hard, it's terrible. It's god awful. So,
yeah, I think it is. I think 5-5. That is crazy. Like, at the beginning of the show, to give something almost middle of the road seems impossible. But we've reached it.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are.
We have reached it. That average, the episode comes out to a 5.83, which...
That makes it far and away the worst episode we've had.
Yeah, episode 1 of this season was a 6.5. Yeah, I mean, there's a 717. That's episode one of season seven. Everything. Oh, okay. There's a couple other sevens. Nothing. Gets into the sixes or the fives in which we are at now. So,
yeah. I mean, this is on IMDb one of the three worst episodes of the show.
5.5. Wow, that's actually that's
and the
nuts.
Other
that's...
two worst episodes of the show are the next two episodes, according to IMDb. So, we got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do. But we hit the peak last episode. We're sliding down the hill. Now we hit the, boom, we hit the drop off, I think, next week. But
hey, it is what it is, man.
Did Arya kill anybody?
Nope.
No.
Gendry's heart.
Ah, that's good. Yep. I like that. Oh, poor little Gendry. He was just a little horny, you know. At the end of the day, dude just wanted to. He was riding high. But
before things get any worse, I want to make an announcement. This will be the last episode of Game of Thrones we cover. We won't be covering episodes five and six.
Fuck it. Yeah, done. Show concludes right here.
Winter is blooming. Wraps up. Two episodes short of the finale. Just don't want to do it again. Just don't want to do it. April Fools, man. It's over. You know, like we're gonna ride this thing out. It is what it is.
It is. Man, wouldn't it have been perfect if next episode would have fallen on April Fools? Like that would have just been even better. If 1 week away.
Yeah, no, we've got a shit show coming. Can't wait. But this Wednesday we're covering what I'm pretty sure is going to be a pretty great movie as we continue our Dev Patel actor spotlight. The Green Knight is this Wednesday for the podcast, and I'm so very excited to watch that for the first time. I cannot wait. I've heard just brilliant things about it, so I'm looking forward to that greatly. That's this Wednesday, and we continue our coverage of The Bad Batch this Friday. I'm so very excited for it, and we will be back with Winter is Blooming next week with The Bells. That's the biggin. It's the biggie. Let's we ride.
Yay. Yeah.
Yep, that's what's to come. And that's what's next week. And next week we will also be arriving at Monkey Man, Dev Patel's new feature film, his directorial debut, written, directed, and starring Dev Patel. Very excited. It's what our last few weeks of Dev Patel content have been in anticipation for. So go see that. Go see that this week and come back next Wednesday and, you know, listen to us talk about it. But with that, I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom. And which one of you cowards shit in my pants?